damages. So, but because we're receiving a lot of delegations, we thought let's start at 9 and finalize the schedule of unauthorized expenditure. So what we want to do, and I employ the same modus operandi when we dealt with the first batch of unauthorized expenditure, in that as and when each executive authority arrives, we'll prioritize that department or entity so that we do not keep them here too long. So we're going to start with IPID. The Minister of Police is here. Good morning and welcome to you and your team. We're dealing with the issues of unauthorized expenditure, which are an overspending on a vote, or expenditure not in accordance with the purpose of a vote. National Treasury briefed us in June after correspondence that there is a long list and schedule of unauthorized expenditure that had not been processed and not finalized. Some of it goes as far back as 2006, which will also then include IPID. So we are prioritizing this, working with National Treasury, because it's our responsibility in part, but we have to satisfy ourselves that the due processes of investigations and consequence management, amongst others, have been done where necessary, so that we can send a report to the Standing Committee on Finance, and then the matter goes to the House. So this morning we are going to get a briefing from yourselves, and then of course the difficult decision we must make is whether the money will come from your budget or it will come from the National Revenue Fund. National Treasury has made recommendations which you probably may have seen or may have heard, and what we want to put up front is that the National Treasury recommendation is not binding on the committee. So convince us, talk to us, engage with us, and then the colleagues will present questions. So we'll start with you, Minister Kele, if there's any opening remarks that you have, and then your team will then engage with us. Why we want the executive authorities, and amongst others, these matters are too old, and we are getting a sense that they're not being dealt with. So this is an escalation on our part in some of them. And in certain instances, the accounting authorities may have been involved, so it makes it a bit tricky as well. So, Minister, over to you. Colleagues, Nirait, Nisha? Okay. Minister, over to you.
Thanks, Chair. Thanks to the colleagues, honorable members of the committee, the executive director of the IPID, and the CFO, and all other officials that are here. Chair, as you say, I was looking at the period and I thought it's old as a Middle East kind of conflict. If you look at the period when it happened, I'm sure this executive director was far away from this department, and this minister was in my base in KZN those years. Was not even in the national government. I was still in the province. Nonetheless, Chair, is here as you have outlined the modus I was supposed to do. It has been presented to me by the ED, and we are grateful that we'll come here. And here, as you say, if we convince the committee and yourself, maybe I can start at the tail end. I think it's a story that you have not asked, but usually good stories are not asked. We have a keen auditor as this department. That's what the AG said to us, that it's not unqualified, Chair, it's clean. So whatever happened these years, which means having not come here and put these things in processes, due processes, as the Chair says, but I think other things have been done to make sure that we don't end with the same one. Chair, through your chair and your permission, maybe we can call on the ED to take us through the proper presentation. With your permission, Chair.
Well, thank you very much, Minister. DM, the President's welcome. We'll come to you and your team once we're done with IPIT. And on the clean audit, Makai, generally we don't praise the fish for swimming. But congratulations. All right, ED, over to you.
Okay, thank you very much.
Let's get the DM of Basic Education to take a seat momentarily so that you can proceed. You can come and sit with Makai here. It's fine. No, you can sit there with the Minister of Police. It's fine. Oh, okay. All right. All right. ED, over to you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. Good morning, esteemed members of SCOPA. And my name is Tikele Dinklase. I'm the Executive Director of IPIT. I am with my colleagues, the CFO next to me, Mr. Patrick Sitsedi. And then behind me, we have the Director of Finance as well as the head of the ED's office, Mr. Disoma Kuban. Let's first thank the opportunity to come before you and present our challenge. I call it a challenge because we've been fighting that it be removed from our books for a very long time. But I think today is the day where we want to see it gone, Chairperson and Honourable Members. I am not going to waste our time. I am now going to hand over to our CFO to then take us through the presentation, and then we'll then be ready for any questions and comments. Thank you. Can I request that the presentation be flighted?
At some point before 9, I asked if we got to go with IT. Okay, colleagues, you've got the hard copies, right? Let's go. Let's proceed. Please start so long, CFO. We will find us along the way with screening of this. But I asked before 9 o'clock if we could to go.
Okay. Thank you, Chairperson, Honorable Members, Ministers, and other officials. Chair, as the Executive Director has indicated, our presentation will cover the purpose. We'll also give a little bit of background on what transpired, and we'll also share with yourself and honorable members internal controls that have been put in place to avoid the recurrence. Chair, the purpose of this presentation is to request the Standing Committee on Public Accounts to consider and grant approval for authorization of the reported unauthorized expenditure incurred in 2005 and 6, as well as 2008 and 9 by the then independent complaints directorate which is now called IPID. In 2005 and 2006, Chair, the department overspent its Program 3 budget allocation by 91,000. That was incurred under goods and services as a result of the printed hard copies of ICD strategic plan for periods of 2006 to 2009, as well as its annual report for the period of 2005 and 2006 financial year. Copies for both strategic plan as well as annual reports were distributed to, amongst others, internal and external stakeholders, including Parliament, National Treasury, and other stakeholders. The quotation and invoice were received from the service providers, which were higher than the allocated budget provided, and no funds could be shifted to the program to offset the excess expenditure, as the 8% requirement limit in terms of Section 43, subsection 2 of the Public Finance Management Act would have been exceeded. So funds could not be shifted because of that limitation. The second transaction, Chair, was in 2008 and 2009. The department incurred higher than plan at vote level by 800,000 as a result of an unanticipated interface on the department's personal system, which incurred on the 30th March 2009, one day before the end of the financial year. On the 31st March 2009, the department discovered that there was an unavoidable personal interface transaction that took place on the 30th March 2009 for employees' salaries and allowances. The interface affected compensation of employees, and as the amount involved was more than the available budget on compensation of employees at a point in the financial year, this resulted into overspending at the vote level. Chair, continuing with the background, we are sharing the sequence of the events on where did we start to request for authorization. The application for authorization was submitted to National Treasury on the 31st of March 2015. A recommendation was made by National Treasury to SCOPA on the 6th of November 2017. The department subsequently followed up on the progress with National Treasury on the 16th of March 2021. National Treasury responded to the department on the 11th June 2021, as well as on the 31st January 2023, indicating that they are awaiting the decision from this committee, which is COPA. On the 6th of October 2023, the department received an invite from the committee for appearance, hence we are here, Chair. In terms of the internal controls, Chair, that have been put in place to avoid the recurrence, the following were measures put in place. The department has since established the monthly budget control committee meetings to monitor the expenditure trends. We are also submitting our in-year monitoring to National Treasury. We have established what we call a financial misconduct committee to look into the issues of misconduct. We have also established our internal control functions, which was not there previously. We are also preparing and submitting our quarterly financial statements to National Treasury and AGSA. There has been no unauthorized expenditure incurred by the department subsequent to the one recorded in the financial year 8 and 9. The implementation of our internal control measures resulted into the department obtaining its first clean audit opinion in the financial year 22-23. Chair, the last slide, we are sharing with the chairperson and honorable members the breakdown of the figures, which we are asking SCOPA to consider for authorization. In 2005 and 2006, it was 91,000. In 8 and 9, it was 800,000. In total, Chair, the amount of unauthorized expenditure that has been reflected in our financial statement amounts to 891. Chair, I submit. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. So, Stumpy, please get these letters of 21 and 23. So I'm not sure how National Treasury says what they're saying to IPED, because we only received a briefing from National Treasury on these unauthorized expenditure in June 2023. So that it's a proper reflection of process. It's just very weird. Right, Minister, are there any remarks on your side on the presentation made?
Well, Chair, I will simply concur because the briefing has been done up to the Ministry, right, and we concur.
Thank you very much, Minister. Right, colleagues, questions? Abu Samia.
Thanks, Honorable Chairperson. Good morning, colleagues, Minister, the team. It, for me, it looks like these amounts are really off a long time ago. And looking into what the division is indicating, there are improvements in terms of their practical their accounting and expenditure levels. As such, their audits have improved. That in itself sends a signal that they have observed key areas which were of note. For example, the 91,000 rand was unnecessarily caused by a lapse of a plan, because we have chosen to print far less than what you did to cover the actual existing expenditure. And on the 800,000 rand, which is indicative of a personal interface, the question would only be at a stage of ensuring that your standard of observation in terms of the expenditure which relates to budget available, that would have been an instance then. So from my part, I think we need to make that kind of a consideration. The only thing which is left would be whether the department will be prepared to absorb such an amount, which goes to about 891,000 rand into their own budget going forward, rather than going to the fiscus. That's the only thing that needs to be balanced in a way. That itself is not much. It's minor, and it could be looked into. Well, the key principle is observation of taking charge of your budget, something which we should not overlook. To those who are present there. So the fact that we have received the audit results, which are more positive, it says that at least you are in the right footing. So that's the comment I would want to sponsor, Chair. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair.
Chair, in acknowledging the progress in the department, I also want to just raise two things as observations. If you look, Chair, for example, at the page 4, the why there was an overspending and the reasons for example, the printing of copies and so on. It's just chair that I think in some cases we must consider, because I know if we go now to the department, we will still find copies of that year. So I don't think it was necessary to go to overspend on such things. And then also the invoices, there was only, according to me, in my English, the quotations were received from the service provider. Was it only one service provider, or was the three quotations? Because this document is a public document, and according to me, you only receive one quotation from one service provider. And lastly, Chair, if we look at the internal controls, Minister, I think it's monthly budget controls, monthly in-year monitoring. I don't think it's something new. It's basics. So what is the extra measures that the department put in place to avoid this? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Honourable Makamba.
Chair, thank you very much, and greetings to the Minister and to the delegation. Mine, Chair, is not really different from what the last speaker has mentioned, but the first thing I just want to say that it's very impressive to note that the department has at least since not incurred any unauthorized expenditure since the implementation of the internal controls under page 7. And as a matter of interest, Chairperson, since I have not sat in these meetings and this is my first time sitting in this particular one, I just want to check with regards to at least the unauthorized expenditure of 91,000. And I believe that that was a tender process, and usually if the tender is being issued, there is a budget allocated for that. So in this instance, how is it possible that the supplier, whatever supplier, because usually in a tender process there is an invitation where the department will probably take more than one. So I want to know, was there no supplier that was closer to the budget that was allocated to avoid the 91,000 that was extra? So what really made the department to choose a supplier which is going to cost them to spend more than what they have budgeted for in the terms of 91,000? And then the issue of 800,000, Chairperson, I see here after the investigation that was made, it was discovered that it was an unavoidable expense due to the interface that was done in the transactions of that whatever department. So what I want to know is, again, on that particular one, was there no budget that was allocated for that particular implementation or whatever that was done on the system to avoid such, because that's a huge amount, 800,000 is a huge amount to be just declared as unauthorized expenditure, as if the department does not have a budget or they do not oversee things like in terms of what they need to spend on. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much. I think we can get responses to that. Welcome to the Minister of Basic Education. Just one thing for the record. But we wrote to the Minister of Finance on the 8th of June as a committee, indicating to him that we will be wanting a briefing on unauthorized expenditure, and he responded on the 20th of June, and hence the meeting that we had. I raise it in light of whatever correspondence that you may have. I'm not saying it's your matter, but I think it's important that I put it on the record so that there's clarity on the timeline, notwithstanding the fact that we recognize that the matter is outstanding. But from our side, following a lot of conversations, the letter from our side was 8 June, and they responded on the 20th of June, the Minister, and we had that briefing at National Treasury in Pretoria. Right, can we get response and reaction to the comments that have been made? And I didn't get, and I think the one issue is around where the money must now come from in the event that we authorize it, because that's also still a two-tier decision. Authorize, not authorize, in the event that we do, where must it come from? Right, over to you, Minister and your team.
Thanks, Chair, again, good morning to colleagues, the Minister, Deputy Ministers, your Chair, and the Honourable Members. Chair, the question raised by the Chair, by the Member of the Committee, Mrs. Samia. This body has a very little budget, Chair. Whenever we make presentation, almost everybody supports us to say it's a small budget that monitors a huge budget. So we will not, it has no fats at all. There is this budget has no fats to cut. So we would really request that the committee looks on us with grace to say somebody must help us. It will be a lot of money for this committee too. It's 800,000. I'm sure in many other departments could be just the change on this one is not the change on this department. So we'll really make that plea. Chair, well, I don't know where it will be finalized to understand the correspondences. The department has put this correspondence that started, looks like, some time ago, which means that the department did try to deal with the matter, not only at the later stage, but earlier on. Honourable Member, because ask if there are other any items that would have been put here to make the control even much harder. I don't know why on these following, maybe it's taken natural that the Internal Audit Committee is part of those things. We do have Internal Audit Committee, of which personnel I have met, which really helps to direct on the very initial stage if there is a problem, to give the warnings, but also meet with the AG and all that. So on those measurements, that would have been put, that we do have internal audit. So from my side, Chair, that would be my response, maybe then handing over to ED. Thanks.
Thank you, Minister. Also welcoming the comments that were made. We will try by all means to respond to the questions that were posed to us. Just to add to what the Minister was saying, was with regard to the extra measures. We did not want to include that. On a weekly basis, we have what we call a 7 a.m. meetings, where we monitor our expenditure on a weekly basis so that we should not get off the track. The intention is to continue to have a clean audit, so this 7 a.m. meetings is actually assisting in dealing with the challenges on a weekly basis. With regard to the questions posed on the tender processes, let me indicate that the first one, the 91,000, it's not a tender process, it's a pre-quotation system. So there was no tender process that took place, that happened during that time. It was actually based on the pre-quotations. And we're saying that we did not have the budget to absorb the 91,000 because we tried to move it around at that particular time, but there was no money available to do that, hence that irregular expenditure. I request that my CFO also explain the process of the personal system, the 800,000 money. It's not about tender process as well. It's a personal in a system that is existing as well as that is needed to be led to a bus system. Yes, Chairperson, we acknowledge that it was only brought to you on the 8th of June. We must also accept that we've been trying every year because we've been striving to have a clean audit throughout the years, but this still remained in our books. So I'm going to request CFO to then respond on the 800,000 so that we can clear the process. Thank you.
Thank you, Edi. Maybe before I touched on the 800,000 question, there was a question asked around the numbers of quotations, why invoices if we printed from one service provider. The answer is that it was not only one document, which is strategic plan document. There were two. It was a strategic plan document as well as annual reports for two various financial years, hence invoices. And with regard to the second matter, 800,000, unfortunately the transaction occurred on the 30th of March, a day before the end of the financial year. And the amount that was incurred was far more than what was remaining in our budget at that particular time. Hence, we exceeded. Otherwise, if we had enough budget, we would have accommodated the expenditure that was incurred. So the interface happened a day before the end of the financial year. By the financial year end, the amount reflected there was exceeding the budget that was available. Thank you.
Okay. Those are the responses. Colleagues, the request is that the money come from the National Revenue Fund. We will clarify. The recommendation by Treasury. Treasury is that it comes from the budget. They recommend that, but we'll consider it and look at it. Yeah. So that we can recommend to the House, because what we're endeavoring to do is to assist the departments clear this off their books, also help National Treasury deal with the headache, because they don't know. And then if a payment plan is required by factories over the MTF as well. So we will look at it. I think, colleagues, are you fine with IPED? Okay, all right. Thank you very much, Minister, and your team. Much appreciated. Thank you very much. Can we get Stats SA and Deputy Minister Morolong and your team? Minister Mojaka, what we're doing is we are taking the executive as and when they arrive. So as soon as we're done with Stats SA, we'll come to you. The matter shouldn't take long either. Deputy Minister Morolong, over to you and your team. So Stats SA has got 3 years, 2017, 18, 11 million, and 24 million, 18, 19. Oh no, that's the recommendation. I was wondering, yeah. So this is the 17, 18, 18, 19, and 19, 20. We incurred unauthorized expenditure of 37 million, 56 million, and 47 million. That's your matter. DMU, no, you are here with, you are a frequent.
Yes,
you are a regular. You are a regular. The modus operandi has not changed. So over to you and your team, and we'll follow the same process.
Well, thank you very much, Chairperson. Let me also convey my greetings to members of the Standing Committee on Public Accounts. The ministers, the deputy ministers present here today, colleagues. Let me start by conveying the apologies of the statistician general who is on leave because of a bereavement in the family. Mr. Calvin Molungwana is the acting statistician general. Chairperson, you would know that Stats SA is a National Statistics Agency, which is regulated by Act Number 6 of 1999. It is undeniable that the work of Stats SA Chair is critical for organs of state, businesses, and individuals with respect to decision making and planning. Now, Stats SA has faced quite severe financial constraints since the 2015-2016 financial year. Stats SA has also incurred unauthorized expenditure in the financial years 2015-2016 to 2019-2020. The unauthorized expenditure incurred by the department during these years is mainly on compensation of employees, due to budget reductions implemented by National Treasury, and not due to financial mismanagement by the department.
this cut resulted in warm bodies not being funded and over expenditure being incurred on the compensation of employees. Stats SA consequently incurred this over expenditure. At that point, the organization stopped filling the vacancies for a period of 5 years, which had a negative impact on the deliverables of the organization. These financial challenges, Chairperson, and negative impact have repeatedly been reported to the Minister and the Presidency, National Treasury, the Portfolio Committee, the Minister of Finance, and the State Council, which advises both the Statistician General and the Minister. Status A received a minimum funding during the 2020-2021 MTF period to fill some critical positions. So the only other related item to unauthorized expenditure relates to the living conditions survey and the KZN customer satisfaction survey, where the detail thereof will be explained by the acting statistician general. Safe to say that the delivery of both these surveys added value to the stakeholders concerned. Chester SA has since 2018 held monthly meetings with National Treasury, which includes reviews of the monthly in-year monitoring report submitted and on the financial state of State SA, and these discussions are continuing. We welcome the proposals made by the National Treasury to condone the unauthorized expenditure, and the acting SG will highlight State SA approach and request in this regard. However, due to recent cost containment measures, SSA finds itself again in the 2015-2016 financial year situation, as the compensation of employees' cost of warm bodies exceeds the budget cuts implemented. So we are here today to account for the unauthorized expenditure incurred and to provide deeper insight into the state of affairs. Through your permission, Chair, I'd like to hand over to the Acting Statistician General to present our report.
Thank you, DM. Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning, members of the committee. Let me also extend my greetings to the Minister and Deputy Ministers available this morning. Indeed, I will be sharing the State SA report, and my report will cover the following. I'll give some background. I'll talk to the unauthorized expenditure. I'll talk to the issues around change and recognition of the unauthorized expenditure. I'll talk as well about engagements with National Treasury as well as consequence management. And I would also refer to National Treasury's recommendation as I also look at the SA recommendation and motivation, Chair. Just as a background, SSA incurred indeed unauthorized expenditure in the financial year 2015-16 to 2019-20 as defined in Section 1 of the Public Finance Management Act. And the overspending of a vote or main division within a vote are as follows. In 2015-16, we had 6.8 million unauthorized. 2017-18, we had 57.2 million. In 2018-19, 54.3 million, and in 2019-20, 50.9 million. And of course, we also, and I would like to rather emphasize that most of this overspend, as the DM has indicated, are really compensation of employees, and I'll go into detail into that. But we also saw a 2.7 million over expenditure in the 2018-19 over and above the 54 million, and that was related to a survey called Customer Satisfaction Survey that we undertook on behalf of the Office of the Premier in KwaZulu-Natal. As Chairperson and members would know that a part of building the statistical system is that we do take user-paid surveys from stakeholders and therefore undertake those projects on their behalf. The unauthorized expenditure incurred by the department, as I say, is mainly on compensation of employees due to the reductions that were implemented by National Treasury at the time. Now zooming into each financial year, starting with 2015-16, the Population and Social Statistics Branch did overspend on its baseline allocation by 6.8 million after variments and shifts were applied during the 2015-16 financial year. The overspending was as a result of funding of the unfunded mandate relating, of course, to the living conditions survey, which is a very important cog in updating the consumer price index. And that is one of the key outputs that STATSSA does provide. And of course, how we dealt with that, we were utilizing savings from vacancies as well as austerity measures. The department did not overspend on the voted baseline. The overexpenditure for the program 3 would not be completely defrayed due to the regulation in the PFMA that really puts a limit of 8% prescribed on the variable. As a result, we did surrender 6.8 million to the National Treasury in the year in question. Moving to 2017-18 and also covering 19-20, the National Treasury further reduced the department's compensation of employees budget to an extent that the cost of currently filled positions, meaning the warm bodies that do exist, at the time exceeded the reduced budget allocations. This compensation of employee budget reduction resulted, of course, in an unauthorized expenditure amounting to a total of 163 million. Or 163.8 million, and it is divided as follows, Chairperson. The financial year 2017-18 recorded 57.2, financial year 18-19 recorded 48.8, while the financial year 2019-20 recorded 50.9. Looking at 2018-19, specifically looking at this user page survey from KZN, the user, the citizen satisfaction survey, we overspend with a total of 2.7 million in this regard. The actual expenditure for the project, Chair, was around 9.4 million. Of which 6.7 million was provided by the Office of the Premier, and that left us with a deficit of 2.7. Continuous engagements, of course, to obtain a refund for this additional funding was unsuccessful, notwithstanding the fact that the results were presented and accepted by the user, and of course they continue to form a cog of progress made by the Office of the Premier in serving the people of KwaZulu-Natal. The shortfall of 2.7 million was therefore included as expenditure in STATSSA financial records for the year in question and disclosed as unauthorized expenditure as required for any expenditure incurred not in accordance with the purpose of the vote. I would also like to bring to the attention of the committee the change in recognition of unauthorized expenditure. Prior to the year 2022-23 financial year, the department recognized unauthorized expenditure at the economic classification level. Subsequent to discussions, of course, with the National Treasury, in particular the Office of the Accountant General, the Auditor General of South Africa as well. A National Treasury Instruction of 2022-2023, Note 4, defines that unauthorized expenditure must be determined at the level of a vote or main division within a vote and not with reference to its economic classification, as was the case. And of course, this change, therefore, define that an unauthorized expenditure must be determined at the level of a vote and not at a level of a classification or the main division within a vote and not with reference to its economic classification. The variance amounts below, as presented, show an excess amount that says that they paid to national revenue fund over the years, relating to the unspent funds of the previous financial years. And in this regard, we show what they paid, and of course what the National Treasury also acknowledges, and the variance thereof. In the year 2015-16, 6.8 million was paid by SSA, and National Treasury does not record it as such. In 2017-18, 57.2 million was paid, while National Treasury recognizes 37.8 million. In 2018-19, 57.1 million was paid, and National Treasury reflects 56.7 million. And in 2019-20, 50.9 was paid, and National Treasury indicates 47.6. In total, Chair, SSA over the period paid around 172 million, while National Treasury recognizes 142, which leaves, therefore, a variance of almost 30 million, 29.9. Measures implemented in preventing of the unauthorized expenditure. We have since 2016-17 to 2022-23, the department stopped filling vacant posts. We rationalized of our filling of posts was implemented, and organizational structure was also reviewed and approved in March of 2020. And the process led to the reduction of 206 posts in the establishment between 2016 to 2023. Of course, the filled posts decreased from the 3.2 in the financial year 2016 to 2.6 posts available at the end of the financial year 2023. That meant that we've got 580 less warm bodies. It needs to also be noted at this stage that National Treasury provided additional funding amounting to 132 million, which is distributed as follows: 40 million in the year 2022-23, 45.5 in the year 2023-24, as well as 46.8 million in the year 24-25 over the midterm. To fill, of course, critical positions. Engagements with our stakeholders. During the financial year 2017-18, discussions were held with National Treasury with regards to the implications of excessive budget cuts that really saw us having more home bodies than the money to pay them. A once-off funding was then to the tune of 70 million was also allocated in the year 2018-19 and was utilized to appoint temporary contract staff to deliver on the core mandate of STES. And in March of 2021, we also briefed the portfolio committee that budget cuts has negatively impacted on the work of the organization. This narrative continued until the additional funding was received from National Treasury. After continued deliberations and consultations as to the impact of not recruiting at all ahead on the mandate of STSA. Furthermore, in all instances of the material unauthorized expenditure incurred was due to budget reductions implemented by the National Treasury. STSA had no control, Chairperson, over the budget cuts as previously referred to, and had to contend with the consequence of the resultant over-expenditure. We also note the living condition survey and the KwaZulu-Natal citizen satisfaction survey that also added much-needed data into the planning of government, even though it incurred minimal unauthorized expenditure. Future user pay survey agreements are now costed based on our zero-based budgeting, and provision is also made for increased funding should the project require any additional work to be conducted. And these are also included in our MOUs as we sign with these other stakeholders that we therefore provide service to. Looking at recommendations from the National Treasury,
right,
on the...
Those recommendations are for us to ask, they're not yours. Jump that one.
I can skip, yes, Chair.
Because you're going to venture into Utabunga Selono Luaku.
Okay.
I'd rather go to your motivations.
Yeah, and recommendations of
that. Okay, let's move to the third one.
Right. Thank you, Chair. I'll then go straight to the recommendations of STATSASA with regard to financing of this unauthorized expenditure. For the year 2015-16, we request that the committee condone unauthorized expenditure to the tune of 6.8 million as a direct charge against the National Revenue Fund. On the year 2017-18, we also recommend that the committee condone unauthorized expenditure to the amount of 57.2 million as a direct charge against the National Revenue Fund. Also in the year 2018-19, we submit to the committee and request condonement of the unauthorized expenditure and the full amount of 57.1 million as a direct charge to the National Revenue Fund. And of course the amount of 57.1 on the year 2018-19 includes the 2.7 million of the unauthorized of the KZN citizen satisfaction survey. Then on the year 2019-20, we also submit and condone, or rather request condonement for unauthorized expenditure at the full amount of 50.9 million as a direct charge to the National Revenue Fund. Our motivation in this regard, Chairperson, is as follows, that unauthorized expenditure was incurred due to excessive budget reductions applied by the National Treasury, which resulted in insufficient budget allocation to cover our existing home bodies. In mitigating against unauthorized expenditure, the department has placed a moratorium on the filling of vacant posts for 4 years to minimize really this risk. We also reduced staff establishment by 206 posts over the period and of course delayed some work in our work program targets. The amount which National Treasury reduced to the unauthorized expenditure disclosed by STATSASA has already been surrendered into the National Revenue Fund in terms of the Treasury Regulations 15.8, as I indicated earlier. Continuous reductions to future STATSASA allocation will affect the department adversely in delivering on its mandate, as the DM has also alluded that the current fiscal climate will already cause National Treasury to implement severe departmental cuts. And these planned departmental cuts will lead us to be in the very same situation we found ourselves at the beginning of the financial year 2015-16, Chairperson. The current 2023-24 cost containment cuts has resulted in the department already having over expenditure on the cost or rather compensation of employees once again, largely due to the funding being provided or no funding being provided for the COLA adjustments, which is the cost of living adjustments, as rather communicated of late. That, Chairperson, brings me to the end of my brief to the committee. Safe to say I am with my colleagues, the acting CFO, the acting DDG of Corporate Services, as well as the Chief Director for Strategy and Planning.
I thank you.
Thank you very much. Why are you all acting?
I guess it's there.
I understand your part. Why is everyone else acting?
I guess.
And how long have they been acting?
Well, I can affirm that the DDG of Corporate Services has at least been acting for the last 6 years. I can equally affirm that the acting CFO has been in his acting capacity for 2.5 years. It's a very difficult situation the department finds itself in, Chairperson. And we try to actually do with the little that we have. We have been equally prioritizing some critical posts. And of course, in the process of your recruitment, at times you do feel some and find challenges in filling others. Even when we have been receiving additional funding, which has led to recent recruitments, quite a number of those recruitments could also not be concluded as we were now finalizing the collection of the census process. It is now beyond the census that recruitment processes was to commence in earnest, and there has been new directive around the recruitment having to be stopped. Having said so, we have not necessarily thrown in the gauntlet. We are engaging National Treasury and submitting our critical positions so that then the recruitment process could still be considered, Chairperson.
6 years DDG, 2.5 years CFO. Surely that should tell you that we, this side, don't take kindly to that. We've raised this thing of acting executives to the extent to which, but this is a full term. 6 years, usually these contracts are 5 years. Right? Six. The other one is halfway through. I don't think it inspires confidence. We're not here for that, but we've raised this thing of persons acting. Are you acting in your ordinary position outside acting as statistician general?
Fortunately, no, Chairperson. I was acting for the last 5 years. I've just been appointed in October.
Oh, welcome, Samuel. Yeah, this acting thing. Just note it as well. Does it arrive out of the moratorium? Right, let's raise this with National Treasury then.
Yes, indeed, to a large extent, the moratorium does affect the recruitment process, Chair.
Yeah, all right, no, engage.
I must also affirm that though the moratorium came recently on the recruitment processes, but as I've indicated in my presentation, that since 2015-16, when we had budget cuts, one of the things that we had to do was to stop recruitment for us to be in a position to fit within the budget that was allocated.
So the moratorium has been lifted for your appointment?
It has not been lifted.
So, and you've been appointed, so you can appoint.
Can I maybe at this stage ask the acting DDG of Corporate to share more light on that
one? Also with Shashai. So what's the status of this moratorium? And then Babsom, you first off the bat, Honorable Makamba, and list in that order. Acting DDG.
Thank you, Chairperson, and good morning, everyone. All protocol observed. Chair, our presentation indicates that from 2015-2016 up until August 2020, could not do any recruitment because the budget cuts that National Treasury implemented on StatsSA exceeded the COE, the cost of our warm bodies. So we could do no recruitment. All that happened was that we had resignations during that period and quite a lot. And that reduced the warm body budget to almost balance with the treasury allocation at the time. We approved our new five-year structure in March 2020 at the time of COVID just hit us. And then the recruitment was delayed. National Treasury, the funding we indicated, was received from the 2021 financial year, and then we started recruitment. Now, if you recall, then with not having recruited for 4 or 5 years almost, we gave internal candidates the option of applying for positions, and then SMS positions were obviously advertised externally. At the same time, we then started running the census project, and all resources, including HRM recruitment, were redirected to the census recruitment, which is over 100,000 temporary staff workers. So then there was a lull in the recruitment of permanent posts. Now we started post the completion of the census project, and we have recruited over 400 people, which included 200 external and 114 internal promotions. Now what that meant was, up until July, we were then still running with a massive recruitment drive, and then the cost containment measures started implementing. So there has been progress in employing, and now we're back to square one with the where we have to provide the list of critical positions to National Treasury and DPSA for their consideration and approval for the 23-24 financial year.
Is there a moratorium in place or not?
Yes. We cannot just advertise.
It doesn't add up. Manje, I don't want us to just be necessarily sharing here, but this compensation of employees is central to your unauthorized expenditure. And by the looks of how you're handling it, there's a lot of gaps. And it, for example, as DDG, are you being compensated at the level of DDG? And
yes,
the CFO being, as in the acting position, compensated at that level?
Yes, there are acting allowances paid for people in those positions.
That was from Makamba, please.
Well, thank you very much, Chair. Good morning to Deputy Minister and the Presidency, the Minister, the Deputy Minister on the part of basic education. This is a critical point which, Chair, you have raised. One which is a bit unpalatable is looking into the position of the acting CFO, a period of 2.5 years. It does not balance up. And then it's somewhat get into an interest as to how the organization is performing financially. We're not dealing with that, but one has an interest. Once you have a CFO in an active position, that leads into quite a lot of deficiencies in as far as the areas of financial management in a prudent way. So it's somewhat elicits some kind of interest in as far as that is concerned. Secondly, and if he's acting, who is acting in the position where the one who is acting is acting? So it means that there would be a domino effect in as far as such areas are concerned. The time is too long, and the CFO position is a very critical position in any organization. So it's arguably the area of necessity in terms of consideration more than anything else, because the money you receive must somewhat be managed quite appropriately through a proper positioning in as far as such a resource base is concerned. I hear much about the DDGs, these and that, but the CFO position matches up with the head of the organization in terms of accountability. Okay, that is a necessary support structure. In any event, you say in terms of your presentation that you had to venture into an unfunded function, a survey which we had to get into living conditions survey, which was an unfunded mandate. I want to test my understanding of such against your actual performance of an unfunded mandate, and knowing very well it is an unfunded mandate, and continuing with it as an unfunded mandate, and you end up incurring unauthorized expenditure against us. So you got into it knowingly that it's unfunded, not only unfunded, it's a mandate which is not funded. So that's what you're saying. It's a slide that deals with areas of focus in as far as unauthorized expenditure 2015-16. And secondly, just to test National Treasury, we might have heard you on this one. That there have been somewhat funds which have been surrendered by Stats SA, which are a bit exorbitant, and then the charge against that, in as far as the end result of existence of such amounts, which are correctly so, account for unauthorized expenditure on their part. But what would that mean in terms of beefing up the National Revenue Fund against probably the existing insistence of rather taking such charge against them, not probably the other way, which I just want your comfort around such in terms of looking into that area. The last thing is that all organizations exist because there's management of processes, and the lapse of managing such processes results into some form of deficiencies, and in this instance such deficiencies end up into unauthorized expenditure. I said that on the so it might have been an imposed condition, as you are saying, that you have had reductions, and budget approvals come with the process of consultations, that each and every year you might have been consulted that your budget is going to be like this in the period of three years, as it is the space of cycle for budgeting. And it looks like, if we hear you, that this was somewhat a bit sudden, and the suddenness of such has resulted into your failure to plan appropriately. And how do you balance that up in terms of getting into that expenditure? And then I take the point of the moratoriums as a reactive measure, you see, on such effect, just to absorb that kind of effect. So I would just need that kind of thing balanced up around those areas. Thank you, Chair.
Councilor Son, Honourable Makamba, Honourable Lee, stand by.
Chair, thank you very much, and greetings to the meeting at large. My first question, Chair, in fact, it looks like the department has serious challenges in terms of their budgets and all, and I'm very curious to know whether it could be the issue of incompetency, or is it because of the nature of the work that they're doing, where they are probably working on ad hoc basis in terms of their work. So I just want to know, this seems to be a continuous thing over years that they incur such unauthorized expenditure, and one of the things that they've mentioned is the fact that the Treasury Department keeps on cutting your budget on a yearly basis. And the question that we need to ask ourselves is, what gives the Treasury Department to have so much appetite to continue cutting your budgets on a yearly basis, knowing that you have been experiencing this issue? So we need to understand that part. Why do they continue doing that? And thirdly, Chairperson, under normal circumstances in each department, when you, at the beginning of the financial year, you would sit as a department and look at your budget constraints, and you plan of your plan according to what you must deliver during that financial year. So I want to understand, in this particular department, do you guys have that kind of a discussion at the beginning of the financial year, where you sit and look at the budget and see, these are the projects that we should be doing, these are the cost estimations, and then you also take into account what you've been allocated as a budget, as a department. So the last one, Chair, I just want to understand, since you've been incurring this unauthorized expenditure for over years, what is it that you guys are doing or have implemented to combat this thing from continuing? Because it looks like this is going to be a yearly thing that your department continues to incur unauthorized expenditure. So I think you need to probably zoom in into your space as to what is really causing this issue, because this is unacceptable that your department continues to incur such large amounts of expenditure on a yearly basis, as if you have no planning committee, you have no direction, you are directionless. So it's quite intriguing, Chair, to really dig deep into finding out what is really happening in this department in terms of your, how you do your work, how you budget, and how you actually execute your expectations. So on that note, Chair, I will end there, and thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Honourable Liz.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I think I would concur that there's clearly a problem here with budgeting, because much has been made about cutting your budget, but we're going back 4 or 5 years longer. It's no surprise. But there seems to have been nothing done about it. We'll wait for people to resign or perhaps die in office or whatever, and eventually we'll get there. We'll get to where we want to be. I'm glad you're not running a business, because you'd be bankrupt, horribly bankrupt. You can't run any organization on that basis. And so to blame budget cuts seems not to be the issue here. I would agree with the last speaker. There's more than just budget cuts. There's a lack of any will to take action to meet the budgets that are available. And, Mr. Chairman, it surprises me that we have so many people here today. I assume they all came and stayed in the hotel last night and flew down from Pretoria, perhaps, or Swane. When they come here and say, we don't have money to appoint people, or there's a moratorium, but of course they have money to pay the acting allowances. So I'm not sure how this saves money to fall within budget. It seems to me to be very, very messy, Mr. Chairman, very messy. And so I'm not sure that there's really a question coming out of this, except I'm becoming quite clear that this department needs a very close monitoring as to what it's doing. My one question would be, in any situation, if I'm going to do something for someone else and I know it's going to cost me money, I get an agreement about who's going to pay. I mean, that's basic. That's not a revelation. Now, you go back to Phoenician times and double entry bookkeeping, and you can, there's nothing new about that. And so who was the accounting officer who entered into this work program for KZN and then failed to collect the money or make sure the money was available. Who was that accounting officer? Because perhaps we should make that person personally liable for this over unauthorized expenditure. So how did that happen, and who was the accounting officer then?
Thank you. Mine is just an observation. Chair. In under the measures implemented and they stopped the filling of vacant positions, in the absence of warm bodies, there are still warm bodies because they are acting positions. So I want to propose, Chair, if possible, that the department must come and present to us the organizational structure and maybe the review and the motivation there, so that we can maybe assist to see how we can assist the department. Thank you, Chair.
Just two things on my side. Three. The money that you say you surrendered, that would be underspending, right? In a voter, in a program, right? So let's call it that. Because this thing of surrender is as though our band, the Venezuela National Treasury, there you go. So which programs did you underspend in, and what were the reasons for that underspending? And noting the 8% limitation on the violence, because that becomes material in your budgeting process. Because this underspending, this unauthorized expenditure was recurring, right? The second point goes to National Treasury, because you are here. So you do the budget cuts, right? And they have an impact on the COE. So in their books, they have a finding and a qualification around unauthorized expenditure. And then years later, you come to us and say, no, let's give them the money again through the National Revenue Fund. It just seems weird. So they raise the issue of budget cuts with you and to say it's got a material impact on our books. And if you underfund us, we'll have an issue in so far as this matter is concerned. But you go ahead and effect that in any case. So year on year, it's repetitive. And then when the unauthorized expenditure is tested, your recommendation is that, well, let's give them the money. Why didn't you give them the money at the point of complaint, for lack of a better phrase? Because then the question is, why should they find in their books unauthorized expenditure on a matter that's been raised that you're going to fund down the line through condoning this unauthorized expenditure through the National Revenue Fund? It just speaks to the budgeting issue that colleagues are raising in terms of how you're handling budgetary processes. It's just, there's a stronger word I wanted to use, but I don't think I should. Final point. So KZN commissions a study. You enter into an agreement, and then they don't pay you the money, and now you want to and ask to fund that shortfall on their part. Why are they not paying you that 2-point-odd-something million rand? And why should the National Revenue Fund foot the bill of people who don't want to pay? It sets into motion a precedent on your part that you're going to enter into agreements. Your clients will refuse to pay, you incur unauthorized expenditure, and then the recommendation becomes the National Revenue Fund must foot the bill. So Treasury, shouldn't KZN be the one, the Office of the Premier, the one footing that bill? I'm worried about the door that this opens, insofar as that shortfall is concerned, notwithstanding what Honorable Lisa said around the service agreement. So I think you'll have to come in and clarify us on that so that we direct that particular amount of 2 points, my notes here, okay, that shortfall of 2.7 million, because you included in your request that let's condone it, including that. Yet, technically, whilst you still carry the blame for having entered into an agreement with UANIC to get the money, but why should KZN get off scot-free on this one? And then the precedence that it sets for me is worrying, because then it opens the floodgates. So let's get responses to those issues. We welcome the Minister of Social Development to join us when we're in process. Minister, you will come in once we are done with the presentation. So then by almost done with that. Let's get responses, please. I start or close, sir. You, up to you, delegators, you deem fit. Timia, can I close? Okay.
Thank you. Through your chair, can I ask the DDG Corporate and CFO to first give the inputs, then I'll come later.
Bruce?
Thank you. Chi, you basically answered your second question, has basically answered the challenges we've had over the years in the budgeting process. Now, just to give background, we are a national department. We are not a private business. So in terms of processes, we are, DPSA is the employer of all the public servants in government. DPSA, we fall when we deal with policies and processes, we fall under the DPSA. So what that means is that we cannot retrench issues section 189 in terms of retrenchment notices without it having going through a bargaining process through the through DPSA, and DPSA as the employer would have to lead that process. Now we know as the public sector there are no retrenchments, and what we had to do was plead, and it's narrated in the public domain, and the Stats Council at the time even threatened to resign due to the increasing budget cuts on COE. Now, there's a difference in classification when we get allocated our funding. COE is a baseline allocation that you cannot exceed or transfer funds from your goods and services budget to reduce that over expenditure on your compensation of employees. So as much as we incur the over expenditure on COE, it could not be reduced by reductions in goods and services. And then our goods and services budget, we've also been fighting for increases to increase the types of statistical releases that we need to deliver in terms of our mandate. So that's the reason why it's not common sense in government, because we need to ensure that workers are still employed. And when we restructured our organizational business, the organogram, employees affected by, for example, when we moved from census was previously paper-based, we went digital now, and those employees have to then be reskilled and placed in other areas, and that process has also been undertaken. So just to explain the difference between compensation of employees and normal goods and services, that the repeated requests, and we've requested, and as you've indicated, you've only started this year, but every year we expect it to be called to SCOPA to explain the situation for that particular financial year regarding the COE unauthorized expenditure. So that is what we were basically stuck with. It's not if your establishment, to give you an idea, our establishment was 3,500 people approved in terms of the structure. We're down to 2,670 employees. So that's an indication that we were trying to align our costs. The acting, when you get paid acting, you actually still maintain your existing position. So you're doing two positions. So we've achieved quite a bit in terms of our performance targets and having unqualified audit opinions with findings. But it has come at the expense of people working a lot of overtime. But just to explain, Chi, we've had monthly engagements as we presented with National Treasury since 2018, and we've pleaded with him on an annual basis. Our budgeting processes. We are clear in terms of our budgeting processes and what we need to do. AE&E processes, we do request for additional funding, and that has been declined. What has happened in the current financial year, I've indicated what happened up until the 23 financial year. You could not allocate money between COE and goods and services. Treasury, due to the current fiscal constraints, is telling departments now you must use your goods and services, cost to offset your COE COLA adjustments that was given by DBSA in terms of the labor engagement processes. So what has been the practice was changed a bit in this current financial year to deal with the overall fiscal constraints facing government. So there's been no, Chairperson, in my view, mismanagement of the budget process. Everything is clear in terms of how the MTF processes work, and we comply with that. We've never been non-compliant in terms of our reporting and indicating to National Treasury where we're heading in terms of our over-expenditure. In terms of the bankruptcy, we've explained to National Treasury you're actually affecting the organization, and Stats SA might not, with the current challenge as well, not fully deliver on its mandate. So I'd like to stop there, Chair. Thanks.
I throw you if I could ask the CFO to, acting CFO to add, Chair.
Thank you, Acting SG. Thank you, Chair and the House. There was a question or a concern around the budgeting process instead as a serious concern. And that arose, I think, from the fact that we managed to underspend. I'm putting it in inverted commas because I want to demonstrate how intentional the department was in trying to defray, you know, the over expenditure on the compensation ceiling, which has got various rules around it. The stopping of the recruitment initially could not, you know, close the gap. The cut which was initiated was over an MTF period, which means it's not just 1 year, it carries over a period of 3 years. That's why you are seeing 17, 18, 19, and 19, 20. So it's not like on an annual basis, as questioned here, Stats SA does not have a budgeting process that is prudent and in place. Now, to even support that, National Treasury in their recommendation, I think they would have supported the full amount. The only reason why they are not supporting a full amount is because of the practice note that came. It's practice note number 4 that the acting SG has actually presented here. It merely says, you know, it cannot be on economic classification only. So they have adjusted what we had originally projected to restate that as an accounting treatment, not necessarily that not all the amount should be condoned. I'm talking COE only now. I'm not speaking for the LCS. And the audits that have been performed can confirm, you know, that our statements were prepared accordingly. There's no issue around the going concern of the department as initially questioned whether we are in business or not. So all these things plus the Treasury recommendation that they acknowledge that they cut beyond what should have been cut.
CFO, careful. Let me help you. Baba, you're going to dig yourself into a huge hole here. Because you see now you are presenting an almost ad hoc style-like kind of budgeting process that is your exclusive domain. Because there's an annual performance plan that you do in budgeting, you present to Parliament. And then there's the BRRR process, which Parliament is currently engaged in even now. Right? Now it's like there must be a special dispensation for yourselves. And that's what I'm worried about. Because you see, your unauthorized expenditure is recurring. And you are underspending in certain votes almost to the tune of what you are overspending on in the other votes. And that's why I asked, where are you underspending? Because the underspend, inverted commas or not. In an APP, you are underspending on an APP, which you have got some sort of room to maneuver in the BRRR process. I'm worried about where you're headed, and I can sense the tension arising this side. But you can proceed, but just, I'm not sure if you're helping, though. I'm just worried.
Okay, thank you. Maybe I didn't, you know, present it very well. I was basically saying the underspending on the APP was intentional without actually compromising the departmental targets. Intentional, there are certain things that the department implemented. For example, for program one, in there we undertook not to take external training. However, we engaged Treasury, for example, in training for supply chain, and that they've got workshops that they render, you know, which are sort of equivalent to the trainings that DPSA charges for, and we simply moved away from those and implemented certain measures, certain spending reviews in order to contain costs during that time. Okay, let me leave it at that because I see the
I think you want to correct intentional underspending as well as the phrase you're throwing out, eh? Anyway, acting SG, let's wrap it up.
Thank you. As I wrap up, can I ask Ms. Clark just to talk on the unfunded mandate you talked about of the living conditions summit?
Thank you, Jay. I just wanted to highlight that the statistical program consists of both periodic surveys, such as the census. Other periodic is our agriculture census that we undertake every 10 years, the population census every 10 years, and then the living condition survey / income and expenditure survey every 5 years. So for those activities or surveys, we have to receive a ring-fence funding or allocated funding. For the 2015 living condition survey, we didn't receive any fund allocation from National Treasury. However, the importance of this survey is so critical for determining the basket of goods and services for the CPI on the one hand, as well as it's our key survey for actually measuring poverty and inequality in South Africa. You will note in all our presentations that that was even the last time that we have conducted the LCS/I income and expenditure survey. So at the time, the organization with the then SG, in consultation with the Statistics Council, in consultation with the Minister, we had to make a risk decision in terms of whether we allow the basket, CPI basket of goods to be continued to be outdated, or whether we make certain adjustments to see how is it possible to fund the survey internally. And that's where the income and expenditure survey in 2015-16, we have never received additional fund allocation for that, and that's why we're calling it an unfunded mandate. But we did manage to to fund it through various measures internally. Overall on the budget vote, we didn't overspend, but within the shifts of 8%, the 6.8 million over expenditure incurred. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. I think indeed the situation that we find ourselves in is undesirable. And I think over the years, since the 2015-16 financial year that we are reporting here, we have and we continued to try and tweak internally to ensure that key statistical outputs are not compromised. And I think the assertion by my colleague on the living conditions is such that shows reprioritization with the understanding that key statistical outputs that informs the economy should not be affected. And that has been the stance, even with all the budget cuts, that we will endeavor to ensure that we protect key indicators coming out of the department. And that's what we have to rather work at, Chairperson. I think colleagues have really outlined, but I would like to also express the following. Yes, there are people acting, and in some instances we had people acting in more than one position because of the skills that are also required to oversee certain area of work. And it is not desirable because we have seen how it has affected employees health-wise. But it's the situation that we needed to try and adapt and manage under very, very difficult circumstances. It's safe to say at this stage, Chairperson, that indeed, on an annual basis, as we look at our deliverables through our APP, the key question always comes, is this the best that the organization can do? Are we actually adhering and responding to the needs of this country? Can we comfortably and confidently say, even with the situation we are in, those outputs that we must protect at all cost, can we provide rather credible data within the constraints that we have? And I think we've demonstrated over the years that despite the situation that we've been in, at least, if anything else, our outputs needed to be protected at all cost. It is indeed undesirable to have a vacancy rate of 19%. But that's the situation we are in, and it has been that for quite a while. However, there are continuous engagements, continuous consultations in trying to reverse the situation. Chairperson, thank you.
All right, so thank you very much. Just stand by, Dave. Let's get National Treasury before you conclude. National Treasury?
Working. Good morning, Honourable Chair and colleagues. Just the apologies from Dr. Modise, the DG of the section. I'm not the budget analyst of this department, but I'll convey what the budget analysts have laid out for us. Firstly, Chair, the team from National Treasury is actually not aware of the 2.8 million. It hasn't been a specific discussion with the National Treasury. So to the extent that the 2.8 million is over and above the recommendation of the Treasury, the Treasury team does not have an objection to that coming back to discussions with the Treasury to come back to this committee at a subsequent point. Particularly if that 2.8 is over and above the recommendation that the Treasury has made. Your question, Chair, why did Treasury not fund at the time and then fund and is now recommending funding now? So the recommendation of the Treasury team is for a mix of Section 34, 1 and 2. So the Treasury is recommending that some of the funding be deducted from the department over the coming year, or perhaps more appropriately over the coming 3 years, given the financial pressures in the department. I think the point you make, Chair, about that the department did underspend on certain programs, that does kind of match the sense of the budget examiners of this program, that the department did have some potential to buy funds to address some of the potential underspending if they had done so in time. And that's partly why the team advised that the department should through Section 34.2 deal through future budgets with some of the spending. I would like to just point out, Chair, that we're likely to see a lot of this problem emerging over the coming year or two, not just in this department, but in many departments. And the reason for that is because of the issue of the unfunded wage agreement for many departments in budgets, the current budget, but also to do with the coming budget battle. The Minister is going to Parliament on the 1st of November around the medium-term budget policy statement. There are big problems in national revenue, so there are many departments that are going to be under pressure in the year ahead. I do think that what South Africa presented, where they have substantially downsized their personnel establishment over a period, I mean, it looked like it was a downsizing of about 400 or 500 posts, you know, shows they went through a very difficult period and they did really attempt to downsize their personnel establishment to keep within budget. So, I mean, clearly they have attempted over time to address the problem and to fit within their budget. But when, during periods when funding is reprioritized, and I think one should recall, Chair, that it's not National Treasury that appropriates budgets, it is Parliament, of course, that appropriates budgets. So, you know, that when funds are shifted or when personal expenditure is cut right across government or when it's shifted to other priorities like fees must fall or other kinds of priorities, there are implications of such decisions, as there will be from the unfunded wage agreement and the low revenue situation we're going in, which will affect budget 2024. I should just point out, Chair, that I think the department has pointed out, and I think you've also pointed out, that the initial definition that was used in the financial statements of the department to classify authorized expenditure was somewhat different to the way that it's correctly classified in terms of the PFMA, and so the recommendations the Treasury has made to you are in terms of that new classification. I should perhaps also just point out for completeness, Chair, that the discussions between the Department and Treasury did not in this period cover the 15-16 period, which the was part of the presentation of the Department. There may have been a previous recommendation to an earlier generation of scope around 15-16, but it's not currently part of the recommendations to you, Chair, Honourable Chair, from the Treasury. So that you'll need to make a call. We would presume the committee may want to make a call whether to deal with that or to postpone that part of your assessment to a subsequent hearing in a subsequent year. Thank you, Chair.
Good, thank you very much. I think, colleagues, we do need to consider court term is coming to an end. Let's put it in our recommendation legacy report, quarterly updates on unauthorized expenditure by National Treasury to circumvent this thing, because as you point out, 15-16 is not in the recommendation. And that's strange, because we met with you National Treasury, at National Treasury. We went there. Okay, DM, please wrap it up.
No, thank you very much, I find it quite unfathomable that Treasury would not have picked up the 2.7 million in user paid survey that was owed to State SA by the cases and provincial government, in the fact that there are these monthly meetings that are taking place. It is a matter that we will obviously want to pursue with the department and subsequently pursue with Treasury. But, you know, I find it quite unfathomable that we would have picked up in the discussion that I assume on a monthly basis. So, President, SSA processes 250 reports a year. Those reports are population and social and community statistics. These reports are produced by warm bodies, and not by, and they're not automated surveys. They are produced by warm bodies, and the reduction of money has got huge implications for these important surveys. They're important because they guide the country in planning and in decision making. So these reports are community surveys, consumer price index, the GDP, the quarterly labor surveys, and so on. So I'm happy that as part of the initiatives to remedy this situation that we're finding ourselves, one of the tasks that we've been able to undertake, or that the department has been able to undertake, was to review its organizational costs. And really this has gone a long way, making sure that regardless of the constraints that we find ourselves with respect to cost of employees, that we are able to perform these responsibilities within the limitations of the budget. And so I'm happy, Chair. I'm also happy that one of the things that we've done with respect to this user-paid service is that the department has taken a conscious decision that we're not going to enter into this user-paid service without the user paying the amount in full, so that we don't have the situation that has occurred in case that we can. Chair, finally, I honestly, respectfully disagree with a member who says they are here, they slept in hotels, even when the limitations on budget. These officials have been invited. They came here because they respect the legislature. They came here because they respect the need to come here and account. And it can't be that when they are here, we then say you have slept in hotels, as if they were not supposed to sleep in hotels, as if they chose to come here physically, as if there was an option that they could engage in this way. So I really, really profusely disagree, and I would want to implore this way that in future we should never do that to officials. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. This 2.7 million. Can we send correspondence to KZN Office of the Premier to provide an explanation as to why they have not paid and get their side of the story in terms of what's the issue, and then National Treasury to provide guidance as to who is liable for the 2.7 million in terms of the issue? But I think we need to clarify it. And whether the Treasury picked it up or not, that is something that you two need to talk about in terms of what you reported to each other. Because if you presented to us this, then I would imagine you would have presented it to National Treasury. So I think substantially there does need to be an improvement in terms of how you are communicating. I think there are going to be delays in us analyzing this particular. There's too many gaps and issues.
No, thanks, Chair. Just a last point for me, that it looks like the FTSG is emphatically placing on record that they are unavoidable products that they have to present the country. And if indeed they want to protect such, they have to be funded. They have to be funded. Otherwise it's going to be perpetual unauthorized expenditure. There is no use to say we must protect this. Your protection, a shield, should be financing. Without financing, our economy, because you're going to get into deeper problem. And Treasury will not be there to protect you against that expenditure. It might be that the DM as well is fine to say that from now on the user pay system should be applied to ensure that your products are well protected. And anything less than that should not be acceptable because there's too much exposure, there's a risk, and therefore if you have a vest in terms of that risk, it's going to be problematic. So that's a point which I wanted to emphasize, Chair. And your technology, revisit your technology. Because if you are coming to us and saying the money is unfunded, but you continue with it, knowing that it's unfunded, we're going to turn against you and say the accounting officer remains responsible for spending funds on matters which is aware that they are a money unfunded. You see, so you can't get your head against the wall. Otherwise, no one will rescue you. So even in accounting, to us, you can't come to us and say, in accounting, you see this mandate, you see we have to perform this kind of a function for so much millions, but you know that it's an unfunded mandate. So look into your technology, look into your actual day-to-day activity, and be able to account appropriately and use the basis of accounting quite properly. Otherwise, Chair, it's not without recognition that FSA is one of the critical institutions which are the instruments to assist government to be armed appropriately for planning, so that in terms of application and meeting the standards that are meant for actual realization of better life, we need such steps for those things to be done. But money, thank you very much.
Treasury, statistics says in 2015-2016, you are supposed to receive funding for living condition survey. You didn't receive it. 2015.
Yes, 2014, 15, 16, we conducted over two periods.
Did you get a written response explanation as to why that those funds were not given for the purposes of that exercise? Thank you very much, Deputy Minister, Acting SG, and all the other acting persons and all the persons for appearing this morning. We will consider your matter, and where further information is required, we will be writing to you. And please do convey our condolences to the statistician, the general, and the chairman and his family. Thank you very much. Can we now please take the Department of Basic Education on the matter of 14-15, unauthorized expenditure of 6.4 million rand around the National Teacher Awards ceremony. Minister, I don't think I must explain the process of perhaps all for the minister, the team, So over to you, ma'am, and thank you very much for your patience.
Thank you very much, Chair. Let me acknowledge my colleagues, the officials, but also members of the committee. Chair, let me start off by apologizing for the last meeting where we invited here. And humbly indicated it was not out of disrespect. I was away in New York and sent on the Secretary General's Committee on High-Level Panel, and the meeting had been planned for the whole year, so I wouldn't be able to be absent. And when I was there, I was requested by the Presidency to spend a day extra to represent the Minister of Women because there was something in front of the next day, so it's late today. So the late request not to be present because I was traveling with the DG. The late request was also not out of disrespect. So I have to humbly apologize for that.
Understandable, no problem.
As you correctly said, we really are coming here to request the committee to condone an unauthorized expenditure of 2014 on a program which we call National Teachers Awards. It's one of our most important programs in the department. It's a program, it's part of the program of teacher appreciation, where annually we have National Teacher Awards. And I think the CFO teacher will explain why we overexpend. But in 2024, for some reason, Chair, we tried, because our students, we tried to be innovative about the work that we're doing. I requested the department to integrate programs, some of the programs that we run in the department, like the effort to say for performance, please bring the winning choir to be part of the program so that we get our young people to sing to their teachers, the program director. I remember in 2014 where kids were succeeded in the speech award. And I said to them, we run very good programs in the department. Can you up communication so that we can celebrate and the whole world should see the talent that is there, motivate teachers even if we are not there. And this program also helps us to identify innovation and encourage teachers. So for 2014, we tried something which came back to us, and we had to retreat from some of the things that we, and I think when we tell what we've done, when we retreat from some of the great things we really wanted to do around the program. 2014, I was in Kalega. 2023, I went to a church, even as a being. The anthem 2014 was sung by the winning choir. For this year, I had to use the tape recorder to really make sure that we don't break the bank. So we will present to you, but that's what we're coming here to appeal for, to say we really request that we be assisted to get condonement of the 2014-2015 expenditure, and then subsequently really has tried to cut to an extent that this year we've been cut below what we had even budgeted to make sure that there's no repeat. So I'm going to ask the DG to lead the delegation, but that's what we're here about. Chair, and thank you very much for giving us the opportunity again.
Thank you very much, Minister. DG, over to you.
Thank you, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members, Honorable Minister of Basic Education, Social Development, Honorable Deputy Minister of Basic Education, and colleagues. Chair, as the Minister indicated, this is the presentation, the outline. I will not go through in the interest of time. I take it that it's given. The purpose, the Minister has also covered the purpose, the motivation around the 6.4 million of unauthorized expenditure. I must emphasize, Chair, it happened during that financial year. It has never happened again, and I doubt whether it will ever happen because of measures that the Minister referred to. Not only have we strengthened our internal control environment, but we've put other structures in place, and we'll run through that quickly. The budget of the department is managed weekly by senior management through a senior management meeting. We have a budget committee. We have a strengthened internal audit function in the department. At that time, the internal audit function was very weak. We've got one of the best audit committees in the public service and the private sector. So this happened only at that time. And in here, we simply provide a background of where the incentive scheme comes from. It's grown. As the Minister said, we have reviewed it with a view of getting more value. I can say with absolute certainty that we're able to produce teachers that represent South Africa in the African Union.
and we are always we come out as the best winners. 2022 and 2023, South Africa became the best winner for the best teacher for the African Union, which even participated at UNESCO. That's the value of the scheme. And as the minister said, we also try to integrate a number of other functions in the department, caregivers, in terms of caring of teachers, in terms of the mass literacy program. We also integrated that into the scheme. And these are the objectives of the NTA. I'm just going to run over them as well. And here again, we indicate that part of the problem was the timing in case something happens. Our attitude is zero tolerance to non-compliance. But because we've learned that this event was taken early in the year, but rather aligning to an important international event, which is called the Day of Celebrating Teachers in the Whole World on the 5th of October. So we've aligned the event to that. So essentially what we are saying is that the difficulty that we experienced in 2014 and 15 was in part attributable to the timing of the event. So that is sorted out as well. I'm going to request the acting CFO just to run through the last few slides. Just very few. The CFO is at UNESCO.
Oh,
he's a substantive CFO.
The question is that manager was actually wanting to know why and for how long.
Good morning, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members, Ministers, Deputy Minister, DG, and colleagues. This slide is just showing the allocation that we had in the 2014-15 financial year, as well as the expenditure. And as we can see, the department had a variance overall of 160.9 million. But the program that had an authorized expenditure is Program 3, which overspent by 6.4 million. And here we are just showing the reasons why it was not possible to shift the funding. I must indicate that due to environment that is allowed, we still had a space to move because we had not shifted over the 8% that is allowed. But in Program 1, we were left with 2.7 million, which was mainly on the accommodation building of the department, which is an earmarked allocation. And then for Program 2, the underspending was mainly due to conditional grants that we had in Naledi schools at the time, as well as the Karugude program, which is earmarked fund. And then for Program 3, that was the over expenditure, 6.4 million. And then Program 4, it was only 802,000 that was left. Program 5, we also had a variance of 21 million, but it was mainly for the withholding of the HIV and AIDS conditional grant. And overall, budget underspend was 160, as I indicated, and overall underspending was 0.8%. And then Program 3 overspent by 6.4, and then the overspending on Program 3 was 0.5%. Environment, as I indicated, of 80%, and the maximum environment permissible was 102 million. But the environment that we made in that year was 26.7, which means the unused permissible environment that was still available was 75.8 million. And then the overspending of, is due to the fact that the NTA expenditure was higher than available funds due to the fact that the 15th annual NTA was utilized to celebrate the teachers. I won't go through this because DG already went through some of this. And then here we are just showing the areas where money was spent, media profiling and publicity that was generated for the 15th annual teacher award. And it's showing all the areas that basically, and the items where the funding was utilized on, and the sponsorships that we received. And the budget was duly approved by the accounting officer of the department in order to ensure that the objectives of the NTA were met. And the DBE also sent a letter to the DG of National Treasury on 29th October 2015 requesting his recommendation to SCOPA for condemnation of the unauthorized expenditure. And then what led to the unauthorized expenditure? The department exceeded the budget of Program 3 by 5% of in the financial year, which led to unauthorized expenditure. This could not be covered from other programs, as some of the underspending was in relation to earmarked funds and withheld conditional grants. Shifting of funds for some of the items required treasury approval, and it was too late to do so. And we're saying it was too late because the event took place in March, and by the time we realized that we are not able to cover from the amounts we have, we couldn't write to treasury to request permission to shift from earmarked funds. And then the corrective steps that were taken to prevent reoccurrence. Internal controls are set in a way to detect, prevent, and correct any unauthorized expenditure that might occur. Over and above the monthly in-year monitoring report to National Treasury, the department developed an expenditure monitoring report. And this report is updated on a weekly basis and submitted to the CFO. From February of the financial year, the report is updated on a daily basis to ensure the budget of the department is not exceeded. The budget versus expenditure report is presented to senior management every 2 weeks and to broad management on a monthly basis at every sitting. And the accounting officer has also appointed a budget committee with the purpose of discussing budget-related matters, and they recommend funding to programs and projects that require additional funding before inception of a project. The NTAs are now taking place in the third quarter of a financial year. And in conclusion, the objectives of the DBE in boosting NTA were met, value for money was realized, jobs were created, overall budget of the vote was not exceeded, only a fraction of the environment permissible in terms of PFMA was utilized. NTA events happened too late in the financial year for adequate environment to be made. And it is recommended that the Standing Committee of Public Accounts approve the request for condonation of unauthorized expenditure. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, thank you very much to the Minister, DG, and Acting CFO. Okay, colleagues, National Treasury says the department only realized after 31 March 2015 that the required National Treasury, that they required National Treasury approval to shift funds from the areas where underspending had occurred. That becomes material. I'm not getting it in the presentation. How is it that you were not aware that you required National Treasury approval to shift funds from areas where underspending had occurred?
I'm sorry. I ask it differently. When the current officer, minister, was present at that time, the current officer, who? The current officer. The colonel officer,
You are an executive authority. The accounting officer. Who was that? But then, I never found that happened. Ah, so, that's all. That's it.
What's his position in the department? Can we speak about the reporting, sorry, just...
Oh, his position is Deputy Director General, the Parent.
And this happened in his acting tenure?
That's correct.
So can we get a response then to the issue that National Treasury raised around the approval? Because I see all the achievements, the good, but Shafiela Mokfele called it all. So how did that happen? How did we proceed with such a massive outlook of 6.4 million? And would imagine that these things must be in the fingertips of accounting officers. But that's the major. And then National Treasury puts the qualification. National approval cannot be granted post facto. So, but did you delegate Tim Yakov? That's where we are on this one.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Good morning to yourself and honorable members, all protocol observed. It's correct that I was the accounting officer in 2014-15, and the acting arrangement ended in 15th August 2015. I approved the budget, which was approximately 19 million, and that is the amount that was exceeded. In the time I was acting, I was not aware of any over expenditure. At the end of March of that financial year, it was not indicated that we have overspent. and we did, you can see that there were violations. And by the time of the financial, the audit being completed by July, I was, it would not have been an audit finding. There were ways to dealt with that. And at the termination of it, then I was out of the picture, because I was at the head of that branch. It was only when the audit was completed that it became part of a finding as such.
Yeah, I think it's probable that this was picked up after the financial year. Given the fact that, let me not say it's probable, it is true, because the event happened on the 7th of March, close to the end of the financial year, and the processes to reconcile the expenditure then clearly went over the financial year. So I accept that something different could have been done. Hindsight is not only the best teacher, but a perfect science. And that's why we don't experience this anymore in the department, because we've learned from it. The bottom line is that Treasury could be right that we requested after the event. Thank you.
Could be, right. Yeah. The issue, was there violence done for this?
Yes, there were.
Right. Now, Treasury, this is the name of the matter, did you? The department only realized after March 31, 2015, that they required National Treasury approval to shift funds from where underspending it came. That's the issue. So the violence you did would have come from understanding. Did you solicit National Treasury approval as a standard operating procedure? Did you or you did not?
And were you aware that you had to do that? I can answer that one for you, that you should have been aware. So did you do it? Did you solicit National Treasury approval when the environments were done for this program?
This is purely administrative process, strictly administrative. If you would move towards this angle, it means a number of things would okay. You have the managers of the project, if it's a project management and other stuff. So they would remain accountable for any instances where the environment has been made. That there's a sign on this environment, E, B, C, D, E, and you would know there and there that we are taking from India, we are bringing it to Paul, and in terms of looking into this process in a sense of closure, you there and then know the values which are somewhat involved. So knowing after effect becomes a problem in an administrative process because you would venture into doing a number of things and you say, I didn't know, I only knew thereafter. You see, it's unpardonable. You see, because once you somewhat pardon lapses, that becomes problematic. So that's why we were asked the first question of an accounting officer in this instance. So the accounting officer remains a responsible authority. So that your investigation would have told us that the lapse has been in this angle. Based on that lapse, this is what then would have done. Well, the action is not on the basis of money stolen, lost, or whatever. Because the individuals you have employed, they have got specific responsibilities, and they should not put you into any potential risk. And therefore, your actions should be in accordance. Because we have planned for this process that is going to take this and that and that and that, and therefore, we have you line up your staff around those kinds of things. There's nothing that says after that we have discovered that this is the case, why you bring this on my table at this time as an accounting officer, and therefore I can act because of those basis. That would have undertaken some kind of a process to clean your desk around these kinds of things. You can't just say, I don't know. After all, that's the process. Ramani, so luckily, you're still here. So I'm looking at that brighter color, not this darker color, which is that at least you're still there as an acting accounting officer at the time. So bringing in these matters, so you must be able to say we undertook these kind of actions in the realization of the lapses themselves. So which Mark came and
the question that did you investigate when it was brought to your attention? What was the finding? Let's get responses. Did you? You will delegate your team as you deem fit. Mm-hmm.
I indicated, I was made aware that there was overspending. I cannot tell you exactly when, but it wasn't as close to March. Could be May, June, or whatever. And I don't want to put my colleagues on the spot, but there were indications that this would be managed. At the time, it wasn't about unauthorized. Vitamins were could have been discussed or whatever. I don't have recollection. And that was where it was. There was no investigation. And we were not looking at there would be a finding on this. And that's when the audit process was going on. And you correctly would indicated that there are managers involved who may have done things in a way they felt best at the time. And then the audit came to an end, and I also stopped acting. So I'm just giving you what it is that was there. If there was a vitamin that was requested, I don't have a recollection of signing anything. It could be there in the system to go for the 26 million, but the CFO may have more information.
The CFO was on standby, CFO. Treasury, I'm coming to you now.
And Chairperson, the government that was effected did not require National Treasury approval. There is a part that does not require Treasury approval. You only inform them at the end of the financial year of the government that was effected, and that was duly done. So on the areas where we could shift funds, we did that according to the PFMA. Thank you, Chair.
Treasury? Because then how does this become unauthorized expenditure? Then why are we here? Treasury? On this one.
Chairperson, again, I'm not the budget examiner of this vote, but it was unauthorized expenditure, and the environments were not done in time. Nevertheless, I think in the recommendation of the Treasury to you, Chair, and your committee, I think there's a sense that, you know, nobody has benefited from this incense error, and that the department should, in authorizing, in recommending authorization of the expenditure, we did suggest that that should be funded from the department's own.
No, 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 go, don't go there, go there. We're not there. We are on the environment. Was it done as penetrated?
No, Chair.
That's what we want. Was that clarity is important. So no investigation was done. Is that what has been said? All right. I then colleagues recommend that Mobaku DDD is saying it may be in the system and listing issues and has got no recollection. Before we finalize on this one, the department must investigate it. 6.4 million rand. And then when they are done with the investigation, they can come back to us. Because Treasury is emphatic that it did not follow the prescripts. The CFO is emphatic that it did not require Treasury approval. That will become a revolving door. So it must be clarified. Because otherwise it means that there's unauthorized expenditure. And it needs clarity on it. And then, Sister, may I ask that you also ask the budget office to look at this one for us, just to provide us with a particular guidance, because the National Treasury recommendation was not binding. I think it does have a very material impact on the budget of the department, 6.4 million. So I think you need to find it out. This one. Our assumption is that when National Treasury briefs us, you have these conversations, and hence then you present your case in terms of what you've done, and they make a recommendation. Now, as an humanity, let's just get the CFO quick. She wants to stand back.
Before the CFO, maybe differently, is that the DG now? Now should be charged to open up some engagement to clarify for us with the National Treasury.
on these aspects which are not clear. I think you have highlighted them, so that through that, before we finish the process, so through that kind of a report from the DG, we could be able then to have a direction which decision to take. Or, if you can just rely on that kind of a report from the DG, that would assist us around that
area.
Chairperson, I just want to clarify something. We were not in dispute with National Treasury. Maybe my explanation was not clear. We did a environment to cover the shortfall on this program, but we could not cover the whole amount. To cover the 6.4, we needed Treasury approval and it was too late. So that part, we did not request approval because it was too late. Thank you.
I think, but that's the nub of the issue. Please go back. Our decision on this matter is going to be held in abeyance pending the investigation of this matter, so that is clarity on it. Because the National Treasury is very categorical, is that you only realize after. So you sought the approval after. And that's where we are on the question of the investigation. How could that have arisen? Because Officer was correct. This is an administrative process which is basic as per PFMA and National Treasury regulation. It's standard. It doesn't need. So we will give you, what's today? This is 17. 30 days. That's rather complicated. Bring this to us so that we can report accordingly. Okay, 14 days?
No, I want to do it in 7 days. Not 14 days. But I want to understand this, Chairperson, is to investigate whether indeed the matter was brought to the attention of Treasury after the fact.
National Treasury is placing it as a requirement that they can't approve this post-fact.
Yes.
And they say you only realize that you had required approval after. Our question is, how could that administrative
lapse
happen? Because it's substantive to you in carrying 6.4 million. And so DDD says no investigation. We require
investigation.
Correct. I'll do that. So that the clarity will be how did it happen. So we now know what has happened. The post-mortem must tell us how and who is responsible for the purposes of conflict management. So, in true spirit of basic education, an overachiever, it says 7 days. That helps us. It helps you so that when we conclude our report, you don't need to come back, Minister, you won't need to come back. You can send the report in writing. By the time we prepare the report, we'll have signed the report itself. And most issues, I think, have been clarified. The only issue is that administrative aspect. So the DG says 7 days, close of business next week Friday. So that it's fair and practical. I know it's not relevant for the purposes of clarity because that's not the realistic. When the cabinet tomorrow, when any talks us and then the ritual, then you any. So, imagine that in front of a practical, there are those who did you, but that's the practical.
Yes. No, I just want clarity on the approach that you're making. When you say it's practical, how is it practical? Is the investigation there? Has it been done? Is it there? It just needs us to present it. Because if you say 7 days, you can't do an investigation over a period of 7 days if it has never been done before. Because I think the matter of fact that we want to hear here is the consequence management in whether the person who did the negligence has been held accountable or not. So if you are telling us 7 days, how is it that you are going to doing that investigation in a period of 7 days and give us feedback. That's my worry, Chairperson. Thank you.
So the issue is one. it's pulling out how and what this administrative lapse happened. So I said 30 days, but we have resolved of 14 days. Would DG, Uchis, 70, 70 years, for the purposes of practicality, next week Friday comes, that is more than 70. Next week Friday, not this week, next week. Umehluleka, it's on him. Honorable Hatta, there was an age, that would
come. No, I'm saying that I'm not going to call my teacher. But see, I want to caution that this should not be done for formality purposes and ticking of the boxes. You must clearly demonstrate that you have dealt with the issue sufficiently in order to avoid and have mitigating factors for future purposes. So that one, it must be clear from our side that when we receive the report, we must be able to satisfy ourselves that indeed you have applied your mind. And if it's just ticking of boxes in order for us to get rid of this matter, we won't accept such.
Next Friday, close of business. If you're not satisfied with your report, we'll bring it back. We'll send it back to you. But Treasury is saying nobody gained anything here. Right? It's with a very focused aspect, which this is what we want. All right, may I take this opportunity to... Minister, any concluding remarks on your side?
No, Chair. I really want to thank you very much for the opportunity that you gave us to come back again. So we indeed can make sure that as soon as possible we can even start working on our way back home.
Thank you very much, Minister. Minister DG and your team, in its entirety, thank you very much. Safe travel and life. This is to be charged as a national asset. That's what you need. Thank you very much, Minister. Can we go to the Minister of Social Development and your team? All right, can I save your indulgence for a comfort break of 5 minutes? Minister Zulu, we will start at 20 to 12, so that's a quick comfort break.
You said that I'm bribing an auditor general. How are you doing? Are you good?
party party.
All minorities.
Last week they submitted the invoice to finance.
Yeah.
It took 4 days.
It took about 4 days.
Yeah.
Oh, okay, no, fine. I don't want to be called here for 6,000. The parliament hasn't. Yolandi sent a very stinky email to say that we must get an updated note from parliament to say about their facilities. Parliament says the only issues that thing wants and it's there for the life until they change it again. It's 2013 that they issued it. It's not going to change, ever. So they don't have to update something that is standing. No, because they said it's a rule. No one is allowed here.
Yeah,
so,
I understand that.
Yeah.
But it's stated in the letter as such that this will stay in power.
Yes, until thy kingdom come. So they say it has been acceptable for everybody. Why is DSD... So,
we want to cover all our bases. We don't want to come
here. Yeah. Okay, but please, I didn't have the energy to tell Yolandi something that I will regret. But just tell her that as soon as there is another letter, we'll obviously do that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Okay. Thanks.
Saying that on the 23rd of June, that meeting that was being referred by the chat,
yes.
Is this the one between the committee and the Alderman Pretoria, or
the question is it going to be
okay, I'm looking now because even the tag we don't have for the 23rd of June. Unless we come to the same couple of it, but let me just check, I think the mic.
Colleagues, let us move Kumakamba, I'm sure she will find us on the way. All right, thank you very much, colleagues. Minister, thank you much for your patience. Welcome to you and your team. We are dealing now with the final matter for the day is the unauthorized expenditure of 1920 of the Department of Social Development of 15.134 billion rands, and they will take us through that, and then we will call it a day. Minister, over to you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and thank you for the opportunity for myself as the executive, but also the department and the accounting officer to come and account to this committee. I'm with, on my left, I'm with Mr. Lintin Kunu, who's the acting DG. I am here with the acting CFO of Social Development. I'm here with the CEO of SASSA. I'm here with the CFO of SASSA and the rest who are the supporting team from the department. But I think the CEO of NDA is also here. We want to upfront, Chairperson, say that we have, since we started in 2019, have been trying to coordinate ourselves as a portfolio of the Department of Social Development. So it's of major interest, even if it is one area that has a challenge for all the others to appreciate and understand so that they can be supportive of each other. The second point that I'd like to raise, Chairperson, is also that we are here for the first time since we started in 2019, and the last time the department was here was 2014-2015. And I raise this, Chair, on the basis that one of the things that I consistently speak to the officials about is the respect and strengthening of institutions of governance. For me, that is very critical, and also the role of the members of parliament, and I'm on record consistently saying to the members, to the officials, they have to respect and understand why members of parliament are here, why the different committees that are there demand of us to come and account, not only to SCOPA as we are here today, but that's a standard and standing appreciation by myself, as well as most of the ones who are here today. I also want the Chairperson to say it's important for me to make the statement that the building and the strengthening of institutions is critical, because I believe that's the way that you can defend and protect, not just defend, but protect the resources of the state, and you can also then be able to make sure that you hold people accountable. And the only way you can do that is when institutions are strong. When the institutions are weak, then you are not able to catch the challenges in the process you discover at the end, which then becomes a problem for accountability. So we are here today by your request and behest, and we are here because we need to respond to the public accounts on unauthorized expenditure which was incurred relating to the 2019-2020 financial year. And so the presentation will be made, but it was sent also to Parliament, I think, on the 13th of October. And I raise this because sometimes we delay in submitting and we make it difficult for the members to go through. And I insist that we need to try our best to make sure that members get the reports on time for them to appraise themselves and not only just receive the reports here. I also want to just take a step back, Chairperson, to say that in 2019 it was the start of the sixth administration of our democratic government, and the social development portfolio had a mammoth task of coordinating and leading implementation of government priority number 4 of the 7 priorities, namely consolidating the social wage through reliable and quality basic services. And that's where our focus has been since then. Priority number four focuses on addressing the multidimensionality of poverty and inequality through social protection. And I think when the DG makes the presentation and the rest will make the presentation, they will also have to raise the issues of COVID-19 and the challenges that we faced thereof, and the need for us as a department, particularly during the national lockdown with the restrictions that came through with that. The past financial year was the most challenging period in living memory because the department overall had to really step up to supporting our communities. And we will recall also that on March 2020, a 21-day national lockdown happened, and I don't want to go into all those details, save to say that when that happened, it became a big challenge for us because we had 18 million grant beneficiaries to deal with, and the manner in which we had been dealing with before then was easier, and then when COVID-19 happened, it meant there was no movement. People couldn't move and go anywhere, and therefore SASSA in particular, collectively, we had to find the quickest and easiest way, and we are very much aware of the stress and strain that people went through at that time of COVID-19. And Chairperson, I want to say that payment of social grants remains the biggest spending item for the social sector, which constitutes more than 95% of the annual budget of the department. On average, we pay 15 billion to more than 18 million beneficiaries. That was prior to the SRD, which is the 350, and which has also became quite popular amongst our people. And we want to say popular because people have got absolutely nothing. It wouldn't be popular. And we understand and appreciate that people can't live on 350. But this was made to be a stopgap for that time. And therefore, in any given month, it was not possible to cover this expenditure within the 2019-2020 financial year to avoid an over-expenditure to be recovered in the 2019-2020 annual financial statement. I therefore would like Chairperson to request the DG and the team and the CEO, where necessary. I think the DG will be the one that directs who makes which part of the presentation. I wish to thank you, and thank you for giving us the opportunity. We really, really respect this committee. We don't want to appear here too many times, but we understand that when there are those challenges, we've got you. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Minister. Over to you, sir.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members. So we can go to the first slide. We are presenting here to this committee an amount of just over 15 billion rand in terms of over expenditure, early payment of grants, social grants, which comes from Program 2 of the department, which is social assistance, and the Minister has given some context to that. I think we would recall, Honourable Chair, that in 2019, of course, we had the COVID-19 pandemic, and that we had to contend with as a country, and of course followed by a series of lockdowns, hard lockdowns in some instances, and a bit more relaxed lockdowns over time. And of course the most affected people at the time were the poorest of the poor, especially those who are also working in the informal sector, or the atypical workers as we call them, it became difficult for them to find any level of employment or economic activity given the lockdown. I must just provide some context. I'll sort of try and tell it in a story so that it's a lot more coherent and a lot more clearer to honorable members. And I'll navigate between this slide and the next slide. I think the first thing that we sort of have to understand by way of context is that before COVID-19, we paid grants on the first of the month to everybody. So all categories of grants were paid on the first of every month. And everyone, of course, would flock to retailers, to ATMs, to post offices, which obviously causes congestion in most cases. And just to also advise that I think it was the 26th of March when the president announced the lockdown, if I'm not mistaken. And of course, because of, I think at the time we were sitting on 1,300 infections or so, if I'm not mistaken. And of course, the implications of having many people gathering in one, yes, gathering in one place, if one person from these people who were infected would spread the pandemic to others at various places where they would gather, they would cause what we call super spreaders at the time. And COVID-19, social grounds was considered as one of the main super spreaders at the time, or would have been one of the super spreaders. And just to give you a sense of numbers, at the time we had just about 500,000 people who were collecting their grants at the post offices. At cash pay points, which is where we go and set up sort of mobile payments in especially your far rural areas where there's no access to ATMs or retailers, we paid, I think, just north of 200,000 people at the time. That's where people would gather, where a CIT van would come and set up, and we'd set up on a regular basis, set up and close up on the day of payments. And then, of course, in terms of ATMs and merchants or retailers, we had just north of 12 million people who would collect their grants in that space. And of course, this created the prime or right environment for super spreaders, as you like, as the minister has indicated. And of course, everyone wanted their money before the hard lockdown to make sure that they have access to some money that they could buy food, etc. So at the net joints, we were then advised that we had to put together a risk mitigation strategy to address the challenges of COVID-19, particularly when it comes to congestion, so that we don't have super spreaders. And so we were advised that we should consider a different way of paying social grants, as opposed to paying it on one day where everybody would come and collect the money. So what we did was we applied a strategy of staggering the grants over a period of time, over a period of days. And this allowed for the merchants also to align. You'll recall that only certain amounts of people were allowed in shops, certain amounts of people were allowed at places of gathering, etc., before the very hard lockdown. So it allowed the merchants to essentially stagger the payments, rather, to align with the numbers that needed to be in various places at the time. And I think what we then decided to do is stagger the days. For example, the first day, we would pay the elderly, which is about 4.1 or 2 million people. And then for another day, we would pay persons with disabilities, which is just about north of 1 million people. And on the third day, we'd pay the child support grants and other grants that are linked to the child support grant, like the foster care and other related grants. And that would be, I think, north of 7.5 million people. So those are the categories that we had to spread out. And there were, so what I just want to indicate is that, if we could go back to the slides. So the president made an announcement that we would pay grants early as a state to avoid this challenge of super spreaders. And so therefore we staggered, you can go to the next slide, we staggered this approach. And of course, as indicated, we would do this at various places to ensure that people have multiple areas to collect their grants. And of course, the net joints also advised that we need to do this. So this was a decision that was taken at various platforms, and we then took the decision to spread the grants. You go to the next slide. In that year, I must indicate, Chair, that in terms of the audit outcome, we did receive a clean audit from the Auditor General for that financial year. And that audit outcome obviously was an improvement in terms of the previous audit outcome that we'd received in 18-19, which was a qualified audit opinion. So there was an improvement in that in the next financial year. And of course, just from a performance point of view, it was the 8th consecutive year that we had received an unqualified audit in terms of outcome, rather, in terms of performance, etc. So there has been a significant amount of improvements in various areas. Let me allow the CFO to quickly take us through, maybe go back to the slide before. That's an important slide, Chair, to highlight the reason why we pay grants, essentially, and you know what we're trying to achieve in terms of addressing the challenges of poverty, etc., and the impact of what we do in terms of the payments of grants. I won't go through the detail because I think honorable members would receive it. I'd like for the CFO to quickly come in, and then I'll come in just on the last slide again, just on one or two fundamental points.
Thank you, DG, and good morning, honorable members and honorable chairperson. Just in terms of the financial information for 1920, this is the overall spending. We spend 108% of our budget in terms of what we had for 1920. The overspending there basically relates then to the 15 billion over expenditure. If one looks then at the various programs, you could see that on social assistance, that's the program where the money is allocated for our social grants, and this money is allocated as exclusively and appropriated in our budget and may not be used for anything else. So there we do see the 15.1 billion over expenditure, and obviously we couldn't fund it because of the budget process for 1920 that's been concluded. But we followed due process to ensure that we could pay these grants on the 30th of March. We've liaised, engaged with the National Treasury. We got relevant authorization to ensure that the department can go into overdraft to ensure that we pay the grants on the 30th. And as I said, because of the budget process has been finalized for that specific financial year, this money couldn't be appropriated or voted for that specific financial year. This is just the, if you look at Program 2 Social Assistance, the various grant types, what the DJ just mentioned in terms of the various grants that was paid on the various days, there you could see the biggest contributors is that into the old age of 6.5 billion and then also our child support grant of 5.9 billion. So this is just the detail of the over expenditure for the various grant types that was recorded in our annual financial statements for 1920. Then just in terms of the, I'm just going to flag a few slides where what our financial status or financial annual financial statements were recorded. For 1920, this is just in terms of the appropriation for social assistance. Basically, the allocation there is mostly related to our transfers and subsidies, and there you can see the over expenditure of 8.6% on the annual budget. And there's the reasons in terms of, as because of the COVID-19 declared, that we had to stagger our payments from the 30th of March for that specific 5 or 6 days that we paid grants, which were supposed to be paid on the 1st of April. Just in terms of the notes, the reconciliation of unauthorized expenditure, again, what has been discovered in the current financial year as restated is the 15.1, and also the analysis of the closing balance, the 15.1, the reasons being the same. Again, what have we done in terms of disciplinary steps? This is also as part of the annual financial statements. So the social assistance grant payments payable. The disciplinary steps, we have been engaged with National Treasury to regulate this in the 2021 financial year to ensure that this money gets regulated and approved for this. So what correction have we done? When the 2021 financial year started, the National Treasury has then said that this 15.1 billion has to be recouped from this financial year. And by that time, there was also an indication that the SRD 350 grant would kick in. So that was basically a set-off because the allocation for our SRD 350 was amounting to about 40 billion, that the cost implications of that would be. So the 15 billion over expenditure was actually then utilized to offset this additional funding that came to the department for 2021 financial year. So in essence, then the 15 billion has been recouped in terms of the over expenditure, but because of the additional allocation that we received for the 350, there was a lesser amount that allocated for the 350 in terms of this. Chair, that's just in terms of financial information. Thanks.
So, Chair, if I could just make 4 points at the end as we conclude this presentation. One is that we've since institutionalized the process of staggering the payment of grants. It's helped us in creating some level of a discipline and social behavioral change, if you like.
in terms of people avoiding having cash all the time, hard cash with them. But it also helps us because you don't have too much cash floating around the system. And CIT vans don't have to be running around and carrying money, etc. So I think we've institutionalized this process, which I think is useful. We are using the same process even now outside of COVID because retailers appreciate the fact that they have time to plan as opposed to having everything centralized on one day. The second issue I do want to raise, Honorable Chair, and perhaps just following the flow of the other committees, the benefits of sitting in the other presentations is quite useful. I do want to say that there was no poor planning from the department side on this matter. There was none, firstly. Secondly, there was no mismanagement of funds. Thirdly, there was no negligence on the side of the department as it relates to this. In fact, this was a response to an emergency situation of COVID-19 that we had to undertake given the risk mitigation measures that we needed to take forward. So there was no investigation that required to be done, Honorable Chair, and therefore there were no consequence management or measures, no consequence management taken, as this was essentially measures to safeguard the country and the people on the whole. Of course, the question you may be asking, what happens if we are to go into another lockdown? I think we've got experience now in terms of how we'd be able to manage that, and depending on the time in which it goes in, we go into a lockdown, we'd be able to manage that in terms of discussions and guidance from Treasury. The third point I want to make is the fact that there was guidance from the President that we should pay grants early, based on the guidance coming from the networks. And this process would have not been actioned from our side as a department had we not received any level of concurrence from the Treasury. We wrote to the Treasury, and we received concurrence from the Treasury that we are indeed able to proceed in the manner in which we did. And I think, which is of course to pay grants early. So this action was taken on the basis of the authorization received from the Treasury and the guidance from themselves, including conversations that we had with the AGSA on this matter. But in addition, we had presented these matters to our portfolio committee as well as SCOA. So they were taken into confidence on these matters briefed in the process that we would undertake. Lastly, I think the grants payments were accordingly accounted for. In other words, there was no loss that was incurred on the department in terms of this unauthorized expenditure. And this is why our request to this committee is that this unauthorized expenditure be considered and charged to the National Revenue Fund. I'd like to close and pause at that, Honorable Chair. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I thought maybe, I know that there'll be questions and the rest will probably be able to answer, but I thought it might be important for the people who actually run this entire process. Maybe the CEO might want to say one or two things. That is, if she has anything to say, then we can hand over to you. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members, Minister, thank you very much for giving me an opportunity to just add on some of the issues that the ADG has actually raised. What's important, Chair and Honourable Members, is that this was a very difficult time for us in terms of looking at what it is that needed to be done differently as a risk mitigating factor for us to address, particularly the elderly, who at the time were the most affected in terms of the virus that was affecting most of them. We therefore, on the advice also from NetJoints, had to look at what it is that we needed to do differently. We consulted extensively with the people that are in the value chain of payment because, as the DG indicated, the bulk of our payment actually happens in the national payment system, and not so much payment but access. Happens in the national payment system whereby fewer people get paid. Those that are in the deep rural areas are the ones that get paid in the cash pay points, which are managed by the post office and now post bank in the different areas where people actually get access. And the about 4% of the people at the time were receiving payments at the post office. Yes, subsequently, because of the challenges with regards to 450, we ended up having to use the post office also extensively, and the rest of the people used the national payment system. So we engaged the retailers and everybody else to look at how they could manage the risk on their side because of the challenges that they were going to experience. This has become institutionalized where all the people that get paid on different days. We need to continue to do better in terms of the behavioral change side, Chairperson, because notwithstanding the fact that the money of the beneficiaries gets paid in the accounts, it's on the day of that people get paid that they actually go out to get their money. So that is one area that I think more can be done by us as government, but also by us as an institution to make it better for our people on the education side. Thank you, Chair.
No, thank you very much, Minister and your team. CEO, you said ADG and then DG. DG, are you acting? Ah, okay, let's start. Why is the DG? Actually, I know most people, when we ask this, they wonder why we ask it. Is because if there's disciplinary processes, we have an interest in ensuring that they are done speedily. So there's a particular context in the ecosystem as to why we zoom into the whole acting. I know sometimes people laugh, but it's because we worry about those elements. So the DG, you acting? Okay, Minister?
Yeah, let me answer that because it is part of my responsibility as an executive to make sure that we have people who are permanent in the system. Yes, the DG is acting. We've gone through the process of selection, of interviewing, of finalizing the process. It is currently sitting with the public service. The finalization of two posts, which is the post of the DG and the other one of the DDG for social welfare services. We've gone through what was necessary for us to do, and we are just awaiting a public service to process it, and then cabinet will pronounce on it. And I do appreciate and understand, Chair, because I'm also speaking, basing myself on the fact that this is something that I personally believe from an institutional point of view. I earlier spoke about strengthening of institutions and being able to hold people accountable. The acting, those that are acting, are held as accountable as the ones who are full-time, but being full-time and filling up of posts is something that I believe needs to be done, because then it creates a stability. And rightfully, when you say when there's issues that need to be dealt with by the DG, at this moment, I think those that are in the acting position, we're really doing our best to make sure that we close that. So for the DG post, it's sitting with public service at the moment. Thank you.
All right, let us get questions. Honourable Makamba, Honourable Somi, in that order.
Nkosi Mhlali ngaphambili, ndibulise uMinister and team. It's quite impressive, Minister, that at least the department did not incur the unauthorized expenditure as a result of negligence. It was aimed at mitigating the strategies to make sure that our people are getting the money timelessly. The question that I have is on it's a pity your slides are not numbered, but it's an AGS slide, the question that I have, where I have a question. It talks about the department's financial statement that improved during the financial year of 2018 and 2019 financial year as a result of that there were no material issues that were identified. So what I want to know, apart from your emergency, of course, the mitigation structures that you had to attend to, what other material conditions are you referring to when you say there were no further material issues that were identified? as a result, you have improved in that financial year. So what else did you probably embark on as a department? And then the last question is on a slide where you speak about the 15 billion, I think it's plus minus 15 billion rand, where the presenter says it was recouped. What I want to know is how was it recouped and where? I just need clarity on that. Maybe there's a misunderstanding from my side. And then, I think that's it. Thank you, Chairman.
Thank you very much, Mr. Samuel. Okay, on the will have a standby.
Thank you very much, Chair. I think let's appreciate the report from the Minister, the DG, CFO and the team. I recall that the then AGSA came Mimakwe to May, so rest in peace. During the process of the real-time audit, that is one of the matters which were raised as constituting the unauthorized expenditure, irregular unauthorized expenditure. And he explained it. You see, there was a paragraph, in fact, more than a paragraph, that he wrote to that respect, acknowledging the result of such unauthorized expenditure, which was based on mitigating the spread, contamination on the scourge of COVID at the time. And the realization, therefore, was to, based on the fact that the payments were brought forward and therefore that would have a cause of such a judgment. And on my side, therefore, even getting a brief from Treasury which recognizes that fact, it then get into the acceptance of the national nature of acceptance of the realization of such expenditure, the way it exists. So, Chair, I want to emphasize the accountability factor on these matters, which would have been coined at the time quite appropriately, and the actual figures thereof were somewhat as a result of the audited financials of the department and as an outcome were signed off by the Auditor General. I'm doing so because I serve in that committee. I chair that committee which looks into the AG, and I want to attest to that effect. So it's noting of a further accountability in that regard. So mine is not a question, but is to take note of the level of accountability and the national responsibility to call into action that the country should act in a particular way to the declaration of a disaster at the time. So that's my point, Chair. Thank you very much.
Honourable Hatter with an H.
Thanks, Chair. It would appear as a simple and straight forward matter. What I don't understand, and excuse my ignorance in this matter, why would then this be termed unauthorized if National Treasury was consulted? I'm raising this, Chair, because at the time, instruction were issued in terms of how you deal with emergency procurement goods, services and work undertaken in order to avoid or expedite the release of whatever necessary funding in order to cater for a disaster. So why would this then be in welcoming Babu Budben? He entered as a speed bullet. Yeah, so Che, I'm trying to understand, is there something that was not done that was supposed to be done in all of this for not to be termed as unauthorized expenditure? Are they no over and above the instructions, of course, from National Treasury? The department, in cases of emergency, unforeseen circumstances, and exceptional circumstances, is there no provision or policy that allows you to do certain things based on exceptional circumstances? Why is this termed unauthorized? Because I would have expected to be covered as such, given the level of consultation and checks and balances that were undertaken. Thank you.
Yeah, I think that's important, Honorable Lato, because earlier on, National Treasury, we sent Basic Education, which they sought approval post facto, right? So I think that clarity is important for us. So I think what you're raising is of critical importance. On a lighter note, on a family note, on our part, we'd like to welcome Ubud Ben, our former committee secretary, who retired at the end of June. It's good to see you again, Ben. I think the minister said client yakho. Nah, it's okay. So it could not have been more timely for him to arrive when we are dealing with social development meeting. But Ben, but Ben, it's good to see you. Okay, Minister, let's get clarity on those, because I think the other overarching issue which must be an exercise to be looked at is that the Disaster Management Act was the first time it was utilized to the extent to which it was. So there has to be due consideration about its implementation protocols and its guidelines and its regulations. And I would imagine, you know, with experience and hindsight somewhat being the best side, an assessment of the implications it has on some of the standing responsibilities of government generally, so whether it's grants, essential services, and so on. So I think we do need to go back. I know National Treasury had guidelines in terms of emergency spending that were in place. Are those adequate? So I do think, also given the number of court actions which took place around the Disaster Management Act, we do need a proactive step to wholly assess its implications, direct and indirect, and what the implications it has on the PFMA, MFMA, and other treasury regulations, because disaster is about spending, right? So now, when the outcomes of spending in disaster result in an outcome, an audit outcome, that presents another, perspective. So I know it's probably not your matter, but I think it's a discussion that has to be had in terms of what it means, so that we don't have outcomes for the sake of outcomes, a finding for the sake of a finding. So it's something that I've just been grappling with, and so that even in the guidelines and the regulations of the Disaster Management Act, some work can be done for each of the sectors, but at the same time, cognizant of the fact that we must not open the floodgates for reckless and irresponsible spending. And this is not to suggest that this was, but looking at the broader picture and, you know, the entire value chain and ecosystem of government spending, because you sort of suspend normality, and then afterwards now you catching up. And I think the final point is then the real-time audits of some you spoke about of critical importance, because they help in dealing with some of this. So let's get responses to those issues, colleagues.
Thank you, Chairperson. I couldn't agree with you more. And I think the President was very proactive, in my view, in ensuring this on-time auditing and calling on the Auditor General not to wait until the end to make sure that we do the right thing at the right time. But I also think one of the things I've been saying to the Department, and I was, you know, COVID-19, also, while it was a challenge and we lost so many lives, but it was also a good lesson for us to even discover the wealth of experience and the wealth of knowledge and the wealth of knowledge that sometimes sits in there and is not pushed to be active in the manner in which it should. And you talk about guidelines and regulations. I mean, when you read legislation and the guidelines and the regulations, and there's nothing that pushes you to implement them on the basis of challenges. I realize what wealth of experience sits in the department in the form, particularly in the department. Brenda is sitting here. I had nightmares from this one, because every time I said we're going this way, she said no, it doesn't work that way. This is how it works. And then she was also supported by Brenton, who is now, is he here? Yeah, who is now at SASA. And every time I said, no, maybe we should, because all I had in my mind was, how do we efficiently, effectively, and speedily respond to the needs of our people? So I fully agree that we should relook into all the things that we did here and do a proper assessment. And Chairperson, the issue of disaster management is actually an issue for us as a Department of Social Development, because whenever there's a disaster, irrespective of what it is, its impact on people, we need to respond to that. And therefore, any guidelines, any regulations that are there, we have to make an input to it. And I think, again, COVID exposed us to some of the weaknesses within the institution, and we're trying to deal with that. I don't want to be responding to the other issues. I'll ask the DG to be very specific, the 15 billion. I know that the other issue was not necessarily a question, but a comment that we need to take very seriously. So I'll ask DG to deal with the other issues, especially the first one, because that's very critical, and the other one with relation to why are we here, if, you know. Go ahead. And I'll also ask the CEO of SASA if she's got something to say on the CFO of SASA.
Thank you very much, Mr. Honourable Members. Thank you for the questions. I will ask CFO to respond to the first question in terms of where the money was recouped from. And then I will come in and deal with some of the others.
Thanks. Just in terms of response, so the financial year 2021 was very unusual, and the intention was that the 15 billion over expenditure for 1920 was supposed to be suspended from the 2021 financial year. And I think in that year, National Treasury had a supplementary budget, because prior to the normal 6 months or the mid-year budget adjustments, where we then basically said, okay, we add the 15 billion over expenditure for the prior year, so take that money now from the next financial year, and that was actually done. But because of the...
Sorry, the gentlemen who are up there, there's a meeting in place here. Not us. Yeah, the outside. Please, can you just ask them, and Lungesa will come and assist you too. Thank you. Sorry, yes, CFO.
No problem, Jay. So it was okay. So the 15 billion was supposed to be then basically declared as a or suspended from the 2021 financial year, and because now the President announced that the payment of the 350 grant had to kick in, and we were responsible for this. And the money that we were allocated for this was about 40 billion to pay this SRD in this financial, the 2021 financial year. The 15 billion over expenditure saving was in basically to balance off the 40 billion, if we're talking out correctly. So instead of giving us 40 billion for the 350, they only gave us 25 billion for this purpose. So the 15 billion for the prior year was actually based as a balance off between what the 350 is going to cost us for the 2021 financially, if I can put it in that, if I answer your question.
Thanks very much, Fani. Just to the question that is asked by the member, there was no material findings at all, hence a clean audit in that year. There were no challenges. The question the input by Honorable Somyo with regards to the accountability factor in the real-time audit, I think one of the things that came out of the real-time audit was the challenges pertaining to data integration amongst government departments. So you would find, for example, that in order for us to do a proper verification of grants recipients, we have to verify that they are not getting money from other institutions. And sometimes you may get, and I'm not mentioning any institutions here, sometimes you may get the data from institution X or institution Y. The challenge is that it's not real-time, that data in itself. So the person, when they applied, they could have been employed or could have been unemployed, but their circumstances could have changed at the time that we've done the verification. And those challenges are things that we are live to and work through with the Treasury and the Auditor General to try and resolve and get the most updated data as quickly as possible. But on the accountability factor, I completely agree with you. And one of the things I think safeguarded us, Honorable Chair, was the consistent consultation along the value chain, the payments value chain, but also the consistent consultation with the correct authorities being the Treasury in the main, as well as the Auditor General. And evidence of this correspondence is available in terms of how we engaged to get the right guidance before we actually act on these matters. And I think that's an important aspect. And the Minister's already spoke about the proactiveness around the real audits, and we've learned very interesting lessons from that as well. Just on the question of unauthorized, firstly, let me say there was nothing that was not done incorrectly. Everything that was done according to the book and was done post having received guidance from the authorities that be. When you look at the term unauthorized, in terms of the PFMA, it's very clear. It indicates that once you overspend on your budget, it becomes unauthorized. So on that basis, we overspent on the budget that was allocated to us, and hence it became unauthorized. The important thing to understand here, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, is the timing of what happened. We're at the tail end of the financial year. There was no reappropriation, so there was no appropriations that was done at that time of the year. And just a reminder, it's not Treasury who have the powers to pass the budget. It's actually Parliament. So in between those 4 or 5 days or so, Parliament could not pass the budget, and there was just no way in which there could be an appropriated budget and that matter being processed. So the timing of this becomes very important. Then on the issue this is a very important aspect around the assessment that needs to be considered insofar as the implications are concerned for essential services. I think, Honorable Chair, you're spot on. We have to learn lessons from how previous processes were done. And I think for me, in the space that we play in, we have an extremely dynamic, vibrant, and active civil society in the space of grants. You would recall that we practically used to be in court almost every month on issues pertaining to grants. So this, in order for us to ensure that we address challenges moving forward, the role players become important. And civil society is an important role player that we engage with on a regular basis on the issue of the payments of grants, including the authorities that I would have mentioned earlier. But I think what's important is the fact that what we are doing now is actually having institutionalized. So COVID was in a way a blessing in disguise for us in terms of how we pay grants. because we've institutionalized that process even now. And we've created, if you like, a social behavioral change aspect amongst recipients in terms of ensuring that it's not always a good idea to always carry cash. There are different ways and measures in which you can access your grants. And I think this for us is an important step in the right direction. Of course, we do engage also with COCTA and other role players in so far as how do we improve moving forward. But I think I take the point. I think it's a useful point. I think I'll pause there, Honorable Chair, if that's okay.
Pause or stop. Pause or suggest or start or boy.
Okay.
All right. Colleagues, are you fine? All right. Just Honorable Liz.
Mr. Chairman, just a quick one. If this is all about timing, why then does it need to come out of the National Revenue Fund and not out of the future year's budget?
Chair, through you, I think it would be best for Treasury to respond to that.
Yeah, no, that's because the recommendation came from the National Treasury. They haven't made their request, in fact, it will come to them, what it is that they... Treasury, can you tell me?
Chair, the Treasury is of the view that DSP acted appropriately given the seriousness of the task and the circumstances. The appropriation, approval and appropriation in terms of Section 34.1, which is from the NRF, does not require, it requires a bill, a finance bill, but it does not require cash to flow because the cash is already in fact flown. So if it were approved in terms of 34.2 and the funds were to be taken from SASA, from DSD, we would then have to remove 15 billion off SASA's budget in the next 3 or 4 years, which would be very detrimental to the payment of grants.
Honourable Chair, I think the explanation from Treasury stands. For us, I think what's important is this is what we view as an accounting practice in a matter that ought to be regularized.
Because National Treasury is recommending. Their recommendation is not binding. We can take half. Payment plan, so we need to hear.
Yes. If it's a Satwagui budget grant, Honourable Chair, it will be, if you recoup it, my apologies, I thought language is, my apologies. I think it would be detrimental to take it from the department in terms of grants moving forward. Ideally, I think Treasury is best to advise in terms of Itatoipi. But
what's your request? Because we must make a determination.
Revenue fund, Honourable Chair.
All right, colleagues, I think let me afford the minister an opportunity to make concluding remarks. I think the matters have been clarified. I think, Honorable Adebe, it's unauthorized expenditure on the basis of definition. That is important. Right, let us hear the minister.
Before the minister, I'm saying if you need to apply your mind correctly on how should we approve this, you are free to do so, so that you are not at gunpoint in terms of your prayer, because it is not, we have all established unanimously that you are not at fault here, you are responding to a disaster. So it would be advisable if you have not thoroughly thought through, give it some time if you so wish, but I'm not saying what you have just said now has not been thoroughly processed. Thank you.
Minister, over to you.
Thank you, Chairperson. We clear about that, but it's also appreciative of a space and time for us to, because as I go back to my firm belief, it's about building these institutions, strengthening these institutions, lessons learned thereof. Next time when people come here, we're not going to come here again.
No.
we try by all means not to, because we try to make sure that we do things by the book as far as possible. But for us, it's the revenue fund. That's what we are sure of. But in closing, Chairperson, I think it's the We are towards the end of the sixth administration. We're towards the end of the sixth administration, and I personally would like to thank members of parliament across the board, irrespective, for their questions, for their oversight, for chasing us as much as they possibly can, because I think the people of South Africa always expect better. And I want to say also in this meeting that I have a very good and strong team of people who really, really do the best that I can. I'm not saying we are perfect, but I can tell you we pull together as a DSD portfolio, and I am always insisting, understand and appreciate why members of parliament have to call you and ask you the questions. They represent constituencies. They need to go back and give reports to their constituencies. So coming here must never be seen in any other way of any form of irritation whatsoever. It's the job that we need to do, and you also help us sharpen the thinking. I mean, this issue of disaster management, for instance, it continues to be a pain to me, because I feel that we are thanking God for us not falling into that line of the worst form of disasters. COVID-19 was the worst form of disaster, but we don't know what other disasters are going to come through, and therefore the strengthening of the interdepartmental plans and our immediate response, and we are first on the firing line, because when people are affected, we have to make sure that they have where they can be taken to, they have food, they have all those things. So our interest in ensuring that South Africa keeps on improving its systems of disaster management is our priority. And so I'd like to thank you for the time that you've given us, and I can assure you we will continue to keep sharpening and strengthening our institutions so that accountability remains a strong arm within us before we are even asked. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Minister. Yeah, we are at the tail end. That's why I now keep referring things to the legacy report.
Sorry, Chairperson. You know, I think I nearly missed one thing, which I think is very important for us, is communication. I think we are finding ourselves in a very difficult situation where we come and we make presentations, and then whatever we present goes out there and it's twisted to whichever way. I think it's important for us to call on the powers of the pen and the powers of everything to also realize that this is a democracy in the making. And therefore the empowering of our communities, for me, is very, very important, because if there's continuous negativity, even where there isn't a need for that, even when people who are here, they came and they do their job, they do everything, but at the end it gets shifted and twisted to suit some other people, it is a problem for me. And I'm saying this really purely, genuinely, from a point of view that in building a nation, you cannot consistently live under negative. And I'm not saying when we've done something wrong, people must not write. People can write. But it's just a plea that the communication is really, really messing us, messing our country in a big way, and it needs our collective psych and collective commitment to say the people of South Africa deserve to know the truth, the people of South Africa deserve to know what's going on, but the people of South Africa also deserve to be treated with the respect that they deserve, that they must be given the right information that doesn't get twisted because it is convenient for some people. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We are also referring things now to the 7th Parliament Legacy Report. That's why we are making recommendations so that we can tighten up on Parliament's own processes. I mean, we are cleaning up an unauthorized expenditure schedule that goes back to 2006, and I think that is something the committee must be proud of. We're sorting out the SIU reporting model with the presidency, which has got reports which are unprocessed since 2001. and we've been working with them to create that matrix. It may be small victories, but in the end of the day, they, you know, they bode well for what is being done. So thank you very much, Minister. And I know that people say they don't want to come here, but even with a clean audit, you can still come here. Because outcome must result in impact. So thank you very much. Let me just make one or two announcements. Colleagues, tomorrow we're meeting with the Department of Public Works and Infrastructure on the Prestige portfolio. And there's an SIU report that will be presented, as I told you, right? SIU, I think, has it come through? Yeah, SIU report tomorrow. And then, on that very happy note, you are all invited to lunch. And it's the beauty of being the last ones who remain with us, and at least we can break bread together. So lunch is in the restaurant down the passage. And the two members, and Ben, and everyone. Colleagues, thank you very much. Tomorrow, Sister Mbi, 9:30. Okay, meeting stands adjourned. Okay, colleagues, tomorrow is 9:00, not 9:30, 9:00.
Yeah, he's from here.
Yes.